ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Online, worldofwrestling.com presents your number one action and comedy radio show based around the world of professional wrestling. OWW Radio.
The King of Kings goes back on his throne.
The champ is here.
The Beast. The Man.
You gotta be the Man.
Whoa. It looks like there's a new sheriff in town.
And man, is it about time.
And this is not a mirage. This is real. This is here. This is now. This is the second coming.
Now your host, Alan. What's his name? Wojcicki? Wojcicki?
Your house started to shake, the heavens opened up, and God himself spoke to you and said this.
Wojcicki, is it? It's Wojcik. Alan Wojcik. Do I really need to write this out for you? God.
Now, your host, Alan Wojcik.
Can't buy me love, love, can't buy me love. I buy you a diamond ring, my friend, if it makes you feel all right. I'll get you anything, my friend, if it makes you feel all right. Cause I don't care too much for money, for money can't
You're listening to us live right now. Welcome to Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network, onlineworldofwrestling.com. The folks at Click Wrestle, you can find some of the greatest matches of all time available for you. And welcome. I am your host, Alan Wojcik. The Spud Guy and Mace will be joining us in a little while. They are still recovering from watching the most confusing pay-per-view in wrestling history that was known as Bound for Glory 2010, and you know what? I don't care about it because we've got cooler stuff tonight. During the 10 o'clock hour, the former five-time, that's a lot of times, WCW heavyweight champion, former King of the Ring, former main event mafia member, Booker T will be here live to take your questions. After his interview, we have a pre-tape with Sean Oliver at Kayfabe Commentaries. He'll be addressing some of their new releases, including this weekend's event in New Jersey with Ring Roast 3 with James E. Cornette. The music tonight is provided by the legends, and yes, I can call these guys legends. John, Paul, George, Ringo, the Beatles are on the show tonight in tribute to the late, great John Lennon, who would have been 70 this week. We'll also sprinkle in some of John's solo stuff and the more talented of his children, Julian. You heard of a lot earlier before we started. So there is no Norwegian death metal because, I wish there was, because our first guest is a connoisseur of all musical realms, and probably we could do an hour just talking music with him without ever going into the wrestling stuff. He is a former ECW star. Yes, the real one, not the one that you saw on WWE TV. He is a former TNA superstar. From day one, he was there. He was also a part of their road staff, a producer. He used to sit behind me at TNA events while America's Most Wanted used to beam me with bottle caps. And unfortunately, due to a severe injury, this Sunday, if you live in anywhere in the state of Tennessee, get in the car, drive to the HWA Arena, which is at 111 Blue Valley Road in Laverne, Tennessee, Sunday at 1 o'clock. You will be there for a benefit for the whole, the evil effing show, as he was known in MLW, Court Bauer rechristened him. Jerry Lynn is here with us tonight. Online World of Wrestling Radio is honored to have you, sir.
Oh, hey, Alan, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. So, the first, I get this question asked to me all the time when I would go to TNA events and I would see you sitting there and they're like, we're always afraid to talk to Jerry because, you know, you hear this nickname, the Evil Effing Show, that was used for MLW, but was that something that you came up with, that Court Bauer came up with, or was that something that always existed in your career?
Wow, I don't. I'm not really sure who came up with it.
Maybe I remember Joey Styles doing it to you.
Oh, well.
I thought it was Joey because it was one of the events, I think, at that bar that ECW used to run in Orlando. That used to be Zuma Beach, and then they turned it into some trendy joint. And I remember them coming up to me and telling me, when you type out the notes, you need to list Jerry as the Evil Essence Show. And I'm like, huh? Okay.
Oh, that's because at the time I hooked up with, who was I hooked up with? Mikey Whipwreck, and the Sinister Minister was managing us, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. So, and as a heel, I had to change the New Effin' Show to the Evil Effin' Show. So I don't know who came up with it.
We asked this question when Steve Corino was here, and believe me, we'll get into your other career endeavors. When he was here, we asked him about MLW as a product because it had really good backing. You had the Sunshine Network involved, Court Bauer had some money involved, you had Joey Styles doing commentary, a lot of former ECW talent, some of the younger talent like the Stampede Bulldogs, who are now the Hart Dynasty. Teddy Hart was there, you were there, La Parca was there. In your mind, what went wrong? Is there an easy way to describe it, or is it indescribable as to how this company went from what could have been greatness to all of a sudden where to go?
I think it was just too sporadic, because there didn't seem to be a specific place to run a show or even TV tapings. And I, you know, the main thing about starting up a company, if you want to make it big, is getting a good TV time slot. And, I don't know. It was just, and, you know, a lot of what I think a lot of people go wrong is marketing and publicity and letting people know you're actually having a show there, you know. So the problem is getting people to know you exist and getting people to show up, and then of course having a good TV time slot.
Now, for fans that know it, the recent ECW event that happened with TNA, instead of teasing this and saving it for later on, we'll get it out of the way now. You were scheduled to take on Rob Van Dam on this pay-per-view, Hardcore Justice. Take the fans through what happened before that, because was it an event in the Northeast, or was this a recurring injury? What went wrong that you weren't able to perform that night?
It was just something out of the clear blue. I was in the gym just training, just not even lifting any heavy weight or anything. I was just doing these squat jumps to work on my cardio and vertical, and after doing a set of 10, I couldn't stand up straight. It was like a knife sticking at me, and here what happened, I ruptured a disc in my L3, L4, and a good sized chunk of it, I guess, was hitting the nerve root coming off the spinal cord. And I couldn't even hardly put any weight on my left leg, and half my leg was numb and tingling and lost a lot of strength, and it started to shrink. But, you know, the whole week, it happened a week before the pay-per-view. And the whole week, I went to the chiropractor a couple times, and nothing worked, and then went and got a cortisone shot in my SI joint. That didn't work. Went and got adjusted again. Finally, he said, you better get an MRI. So I got the MRI, and sure enough, they saw the ruptured disc and the chunk that was sitting on the nerve. So I couldn't do the pay-per-view. I had to cancel. I canceled the show in Queens the day before the pay-per-view, too. I was supposed to wrestle Homicide that day.
Oh, wow.
But that was all she wrote.
The phone number is 877-588-9877, option 1. And it looks like we already have somebody on the line. Hello, welcome to the show. Your name and where you're calling from.
Good evening, man. This is the Psycho Medic from Nashville.
How are you?
Hey.
Welcome to the show, sir.
How you doing, Jerry? Long time no hear, man.
Yeah, I'm hanging in there. I'm plugging away.
Hey.
Oh, yeah.
What's on your mind tonight, Psycho Medic?
Well, first of all, I'm hoping Jerry gets better real soon, and to let him know that I will be at that benefit this coming Sunday.
Oh, awesome.
And real quick, before I got a question for you, Jerry, real quick, You happen to know a gentleman that goes to the same church with you that works at the job I work at Murfreesboro.
Yeah, I just talked to him last week, I think. No, the week before that.
Yes, Mr. Pope, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Okay, I figured you remember by then. But anyway, like I said, I will be there at your benefit, man. I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait. Matter of fact, it's at a good time because I will be on vacation and I can make it. But what I wanted to ask you, question number one, man, I've watched you for a long time, even way before I got in the business, and I've been in it for about 6 years. When did you get started? And number two, do you think after this surgery that you have, you think you might get back in it and do anything after that or what?
I got started in 1988, went through camp. But what was the second part of the question? I couldn't hear.
The second part, I'm sorry, I'm on my cell phone in the house, brother. The second part is, I know you had to have your back surgery. Has the doctor said anything about there's any chance you might be getting back in the ring sometime in the future or what?
Well, before the surgery, he told me that there have been football players who've had the same thing, same operation, who've gone on to play football 5 to 6 years.
Wow.
But after the surgery, he says to me in a very serious tone, have you thought about what you want to do for a career, you know, for the rest of your life? It sounded like it wouldn't be a good idea to keep wrestling. And he told me, you know, when he first looked at the MRI also, that I have deteriorating disc disease also, probably from what I've done for the last 20 years. So he said I'm very susceptible to rupturing other discs in other locations. So it's, you know, it's pretty much up to me, I think. It depends, you know. But it was a very eye-opening experience. We could all lose it all, you know, just at the drop of a dime. So.
I understand that, man. I just want to say, man, I'm going to hang up and listen, but I want to tell you this, man, even if you don't come back, I just want to thank you because you have entertained me over the years before I even got in the business, and you entertained me even while I was in the business, and I appreciate it, man. I from what I've seen your work, I've learned a lot from you, so I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling in tonight, Psychomatic Guest, and he is listed. If you go to the Mid-South Wrestling Message Board run by the infamous Trent Van Dries, you can find the entire event there, and we'll post links for it later on. 877-588-9877, option 1 is the way to join us. You can Skype Sir Rocking if you're part of the Skype network, or if you're in our chat room like the Psychomedic was. Jersey Girl in our room wanted to know, what company do you believe handled the ECW reunion concept better? TNA with the Hardcore Justice event, or the 2 one-night stand events that World Wrestling Entertainment put on?
I would say the TNA one, because I think they more or less tried to do it like the old school ECW show was, where the WWE ones had to be bastardized with the WWE guys. So if it was success, Vince could give all the credit to the WWE.
How did you feel looking back at the those events? One of those events, I know the WWE talent sat up in the balcony at Hammerstein, like JBL did, Edge did. Do you think that Dixie, more or less, as she said in her promo on TV, that she quote-unquote got ECW, as opposed to how Vince handled the thing?
Oh, I don't know what she was thinking, but I'm sure, you know, I'm just glad. I think what made the big difference was they more or less let Tommy run it and have, you know, do it this vision and what the ECW did, what it should have been like, as much as possible, like the original ECW.
Mm-hmm. Joining us now are both from Wrestle Talk Radio. We have an Australian gentleman named Mace and a gentleman out of the Cleveland area named Spug. And the fun part, Jerry, is that Both of them are ECW fans and also trained performers, so in some form or another, they know what you're physically going through.
Sort of. I had a broken tailbone once.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, yeah. I was sitting here listening to a last phone call asking you about your career, and you had mentioned that the doctor had a deteriorating disc disease and that it may be time to hang up the boots. Looking through your title history, you've had a pretty long, illustrious title reign with several different titles. Does any one of those mean any more to you than the other one, or is it just a championship to acknowledge your abilities in the ring and with the fans?
I guess I've always looked at when you get a title, I've always just looked at it as a reward for hard work. So, you know, they've all meant something. So, but as far as one meaning more than the rest, that's a tough one. Cause there's just a lot of different, conditions around each getting, you know, when you get each one. So that's tough because, you know, getting the ECW one, it was bittersweet because I knew it wasn't going to last long because I knew initially they didn't want it on me to begin with, but someone talked them into it because it was good business at the time. But it was a great night because, well, my dad was there and he'd only been to like three of my matches in my whole career. So that was special. And plus, you know, the place was packed and it was one of the loudest things I'd ever heard. But and then the Ring of Honor one was special because, you know, it's with the work rate's a lot different there and you really gotta go. And like I said, I always looked at getting the title as pretty most of the time is getting rewarded for your hard work. And then you had the WWF light heavyweight title, which was that one confused me because it was my debut on TV with the company. So I just looked at that one as maybe it was an attitude check to see how I act if I had a belt on me or something. Because some guys lose their minds and let it go to their head and just go total nutso, you know. But so that one confused me. But so there's, I guess there's different instances with each one as to, you know, the how it made you feel and stuff. But I've always just looked at it as a reward for your hard work.
Now, you mentioned ROH, and you mentioned the work rate in ROH, and I really have to go. Does today's work rate in ROH remind you of ECW days of old with Malenko and Guerrero and Mysterio and the like?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, that's pretty much where it all started, that kind of work rate. With those guys and some of the stuff going on in New Japan at the time, because they started really emphasizing the light heavyweights back then too.
Out of the kids that you got to see in Ring of Honor, I keep getting all these initials mixed together. One of them that's a favorite of ours on the show, and only because I got to see him in his infancy in the business, is the current world champion, Roderick Strong. Have you gotten to see, when you were working for them, did you get to see him and sit there and go, wow, this kid's really good, or do you think he's a year or two away from being to that level that could be a main eventer in TNA and WWE?
Well, as far as main eventing in TNA and WWE, I think his size will be against him a little bit there. But I've wrestled him like FIP, and before I went to, they brought me in the Ring of Honor full time, and then wrestled him in Ring of Honor and stuff, and he's very talented. I don't like being chopped by him.
No, I don't think anybody does.
Actually, I'm allergic to chops. I always break into this rash the shape of a hand.
Well, you look so, like how Sheamus did when Khali got him on TV. It's like, oh my god.
Yeah. But no, yeah, he's very talented. And I just think, you know, one of the things that'll you know, as far as main eventing a major company would be his size.
877-588-9877, option one is the way to call in to All My World of Wrestling Radio with Jerry Lynn. The event is in Laverne, New Jersey. Laverne, Tennessee at the HWA Arena, which is a weekly event, usually, I think, on a Thursday or Friday. I always get it mixed up because there's so many events going on in that town. With the Nashville scene, being that you live there and when TNA was going on, talk about that town overall for wrestling, because you've got, at one point or another, you've got Tony Falk running, Mike Porter running, Burt Prentice, and I think one of the Ghoulish folks involved. And then you got Reno Riggins running. Every time you turn around, there's all these people fighting for one nut. How do you feel about being in a town like that?
I think nowadays every city's like that. It seems every day, every city, major city in the country seems to have at least a dozen indie promoters, you know, trying to take over the town. And the sad thing is they always, most of the time, seem too busy. They spend more time and energy trying to tear apart each other's shows instead of just worrying about running their own show and putting out a good product. But yeah, every city nowadays just seems to be oversaturated. And then after TNA was here for how many years, given a free pay-per-view every week, I think Nashville is just kind of same as Knoxville. It's just burnt out.
You were actually on the current release that TNA Wrestling put out, the Best of the Asylum Years, Volume 1, and featured in a triple ladder match with yourself, AJ Styles, and Low Key. And I got an email from at the radio, box here at RadioOnlineWorldOfWrestling.com from Lakeisha Oliver Burdine, who wanted to know, what is the hardest match to take the kayfabe wall down for a moment, what is the hardest match to do? Is it a multi-person ladder match, or is there any particular gimmick match, if you want to use that term, that gave you frustrations as you kind of looked at the promoter and said, what the heck are you thinking, man?
Oh, boy, that's happened so many times. What are you thinking? The hardest match. Well, I guess it would be, there's so many instances and situations where what the promoter wants just makes absolute zero sense. That's the hardest match, when you got to go out there and try and tell a story and what they want you to do makes zero sense whatsoever. So I wouldn't particularly say, a hardcore match is going to be harder than a last man standing match or a, you know, any gimmick matches are any more difficult than any others. It's just, like I see, I'm trying to think of a for instance.
Well, think back to the night, were you in Nashville the night that they did the first Ultimate X match with Kazarian, Michael Shane, and Chris Sabin?
Yeah.
Because they told a story to me where one of the day before, all three of them told the same story in separate interviews, that they did paper, rock, scissors for one of them to go up, and one of them started to go up, and by the time they got halfway to the middle, they were already standing in the middle of the ring because the Ultimate X had bent down. So, is there a gimmick match that you've seen like that, like King of the Mountain, like Lethal Lockdown, the old WCW War Games, that you may have thought, man, I want to get booked in that? And then is there one that you sat there going, love you, Paul, love you, whoever the promoter is, but you can't pay me enough to do some of this crazy stuff?
Oh, I'm trying to think if there's one I wanted to be booked in. I don't think so. I never wanted to do a Ultimate X match because it's bad enough coming off the top rope or diving to the floor, let alone make it even higher that the guy's got to fall off of, you know, and risk, you know, that's up the percentage of getting hurt here. So, No, I've never wanted to do that match. And I always thought, like, the King of the Mountain one. Is that the one where you got the penalty box, and then you get...
Yeah, that's the penalty box one.
And you
2 minutes
in the
box.
Up on the hook and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, the reverse one. I remember being at the one in 2005 in Nashville, Slammiversary, and the Orlando fans had never seen it, and they're going like, okay, say these rules again. I was like, oh, wait, these rules get real fun. Stay with me.
Yeah, that to me, it just makes it too difficult for the fans to understand. And a match is like that. That would be very difficult when you got how many guys in that match, and then you got to tell a story and have it all make sense to the fans, and it's hard enough just to follow the rules and then keep track. Oh, he's already did 2 minutes in the penalty box, or he's been pinned, so or he pinned someone, so now he's eligible to put a belt up on the hook, which never made sense to take the belt and go put it up there anyway. So that's one match that just drove me nuts because it's yeah. just too confusing. And you know, in wrestling, people just want a yay and a boo, Cowboys and Indians. It's that simple. Don't fix what ain't broke.
Yeah. As mentioned, when I was at TNA events, you're usually behind me at a very nice production table watching the shows, yelling at me, like, sit down. I'm like, okay, sorry, Jerry, I didn't know it was that tall. What in your career led to you becoming part of TNA's backstage crew, and were you comfortable in being in a role with that, or did you ever kind of sit there and go, you know, I can still go in the ring, guys, you know, I'm working indie dates, and I had seen you at a NYWC event the weekend that sure. Kurt Angle debuted. I mean, was that something that you went to them and said, I'd like to take a step back, or was it something that TNA and Russo and Creative did?
It was, I needed shoulder surgery after Hoovy gave me a special Hoovy driver and dropped me on my head and shoulder. So, became a road agent behind the scenes while I was recovering. So, and, you know, I always said someday down the road when I can't wrestle anymore, I still want to be involved in the business behind the scenes. So it was a good learning experience.
Crazy Talon in our chat room, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I wanted to know, if a kid comes up to you and says to you, Jerry Lynn, I want to be a wrestler, what would you say to them?
I always say, go to college first. Get a degree in something so you have something to fall back on. Because I don't. And I don't want to become the real life Randy the Ram. That's what I tell them all. I say, go to school first.
Well, that's the prerequisite question before Spug goes ahead. We've had countless folks on the show that movie does come up. Did that remind you of days in ECW, some of the stuff you saw in that film, or were you just sitting there going, wow, these guys missed the mark totally?
No, it was, you know, there were some parts that it hit right dead on, but I always said if it wasn't about a particular wrestler at a particular time in his career, they really could have showed more of the nitty-gritty part of the business. So I've had a lot worse locker rooms than what they've had in the movie.
Now, would you say you want to stay in the business after your time has come? Would you think about opening up a school or taking a few of the younger guys under your wing away from being a road agent to help them maybe stay away from some of the pitfalls that people fall into in the business?
Well, if someone wanted to hire me and put me under contract and give me a weekly paycheck to be a trainer, sure. But as far as opening my own school, I don't know. That's a tough gamble because you got to have a ring, you got to have mats and equipment, you got to have a building, you have to have insurance in case someone gets hurt. And then it seems the majority of people who want to be a pro wrestler don't have money. And I wouldn't put someone on a payment plan because who's to say they wouldn't quit after 2 weeks and run around and say Jerry Lynn trained me and they're still the drizzling shit.
Oh yeah, I'm sure that's happened to tons of people in the business, which is sad.
Right. So it's a big gamble. So I don't know about opening up my own school, but you know, if someone wanted to hire me to, and they had their own school already, yeah, I'd do that.
Enough.
Jerry Lynn joining us here online, World of Wrestling Radio, 877-588-9877, option 1. You can Skype Sir Rockin', or you can join us like the folks are in our chat room. Speaking of another question that may throw you off throughout your career. Jersey Girl wants to know if you can narrow it to one person you enjoyed working with, and is there one particular person or group of wrestlers that you can name that you would refuse to work with ever again?
Okay. I would refuse to work with Juventud ever again. And the person I enjoy working with the most is someone who doesn't hurt me. So if I get through that match without getting hurt, I love working with you.
Did you happen to watch the actual ECW, WCW, whatever, NWA, whatever, TNA, Hardcore Justice event? And how do you think Tommy did with the creative of the show?
I didn't see it.
Haven't. would you have liked to have, if you had been there, how would, because I think they wanted, it was supposed to be you and RVD, and then when they had Sabu in there, there was rumors that they wanted Sabu to actually win the TNA World title. Little risky there with a guy who's had health issues of his own. How would you have handled that if you were with TNA and they had said to you, so we're thinking of putting the belt on Sabu, what do you think, Jerry?
I would have said good for Sabu, because then you'd have a steady paycheck again.
Did they contact you at all? If the way things had gone, if you had not been injured, a lot of the folks that are still there, like Raven and Stevie and Rhino and Sabu, stayed around for this EV 2.0. Was that in the deal that they made with you for the Hardcore Justice event, or are you not able to speak to specifics?
No, there was nothing further than that.
So it was a one-shot deal for you, just that event?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not fair.
Well, I don't know if they would have, you know, if they had any more plans for me after that, but that's all we've talked about.
Mace has been sitting formulating a question, but I think Spug's got one.
Go ahead, Mace.
Yeah, I'm trying to work out some sort of really good question. I couldn't even come up with what I like to do. But just a quick question for you, Jerry. At one point in ECW, you were known as the new effing show. I'm just wondering who came up with the idea, like, what was the thought process, or was it just you were the guy that was going to replace RVD at the time?
It was the pay-per-view in Asbury Park, Living Dangerously. After a series of spots, there was one whole section of the arena started chanting the new effing show. So, I guess the fans sort of gave me the name, and it just stuck.
Is that something you'd love to see more with today's creative process, that the fans, what they say and how they act, works with the wrestlers and the way that storylines and everything are going to progress, or should it just be left in the hands of the writers?
Well, it depends. You know, which fans? Because nowadays there's so many so-called smart marks who, it's like they come to the shows just to try and get their 15 minutes of fame, or, you know, or get on the message boards and let everyone know how much they hated the booking and so, and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So, and those fans, I don't know, to me those fans aren't even fans anymore. They're just critics. And they show up just to critique and not even to have a good time. But if you listen to the fans that are actually there, you know, just to have a great time and just go with the flow, you know, you listen to those fans. But the so-called smart marks and the, you know, and there's smart marks who do show up to have fun too. I'm just talking about the ones who never show up to have a good time. It's like they want to control the show and make themselves part of the show to control the show or something. Or to show off to everyone else how much behind-the-scenes knowledge they have. You know, I wouldn't listen to them.
Now, Jerry, we all know how heavily scripted promos are in the two big companies nowadays. Would you like to see it go back to the days where the workers themselves had more creative control over what they got to say? Where they, you know, were just handed a bullet point list instead of word for word, you will read this?
Yeah, I don't like the word for word thing, because it doesn't sound like how you would actually say it. They should just give you the bullet points and say it how your character would say it, and then that would flow much naturally. That's why, you know, and some guys get such a bad rap about, oh, they're horrible on the mic and stuff. Well, when you're handed a script and you're supposed to memorize it word for word and say it the way they want you to say it, it's not going to come off naturally. So, yeah, you should just be given your bullet points, what you have to get across, and just say it how your character would.
Speaking of someone who was extremely free with what they did creatively, Paul Heyman allowed you guys to roam a wide range as far as your creativity went. And we all know he was a mad scientist when it came to storylines and booking and things like that. Is there anything that he approached you with during your time there that was a bit too far out there for you?
No. Mm-mm. I think when I first started and I'd come up with ideas, I would always ask permission to do them, and I'd get shot down all the time. So finally one night at the ECW Arena, Justin Credible and I had a 2 out of 3 falls match, and I told Justin before the match, I said, we're not going to ask permission to do anything tonight. We're just going to go out there and do what we do. And we went out there and tore the house down, and after that, never had any problems. Just went out and did what I did. But it's funny, when I first started using Fear Factory's song Scapegoat for my ring music, Randy came back. Randy, the song guy, told me, he says, Paulie don't like it. It's too hard. I said, too hard? I said, this is ECW. We're supposed to be extreme. So I just stuck with the music. But no, he never asked me to do anything that I'd turn down. Now, if it was, you know, something totally ridiculous, like getting hit with a weed whacker or something, of course I'd say no, but...
You had mentioned audience and being in different ones. Which was the more difficult to perform in front of? That ECW crowd or the ones that you recently viewed in Ring of Honor? Because I've heard from certain wrestlers like Kenny King and Rhett Titus and Roderick that they're really, really smart markish with ROH. Which was harder?
Well, some of them ROH crowds, yeah. You know, and I don't want to say all the ROH fans, because, no, there's a lot of good ROH fans, but there's some, like I said, they don't show up to have fun. They just show up to critique and overanalyze every little thing you do. And why show up then if you're not there to have a good time and you're there just to crap on everything? So that's like the one show in Edison, New Jersey. At the end of the show, some kid was yelling out loud, I'm fucking angry, I'm fucking angry. And so after I put over the Briscoes at the end of the match and stuff, I turned and I said, who's effing angry? And some guy's pointing to his buddy. And I told the guy, I said, if you're not happy after what you just saw here tonight, I said, go watch WWE. And I could have went about it a better way, but my point was, if you're not thoroughly entertained after a 3-hour Ring of Honor show, and you got 40 other guys who killed themselves in the ring for you, then it's not the booking's fault. You know, it's not the product's fault. It's not the wrestler's fault. It's your fault. There's something wrong with you. Then you're not showing up to have a good time. Then don't show up. It's like if you see a show on TV you don't like, turn the channel. And, you know, and if you got fans showing up like that, well, then you're ruining our fun. Because, yeah, if this isn't fun, why do it? Because we're just destroying our bodies in the process, and we feed off the energy, the fans' energy. It's a give-and-take situation, you know?
877-588-9877, option 1 is the way to join us. Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network Productions. And the number one place for wrestling news, onlineworldofwrestling.com. got to ask a non-wrestling question because Spug is chomping at the bit for this one. He is a pure heavy metal fan. Now, I kind of feel like I'm about to sit on the couch with the That Metal Show crew on VH1 Classic. So I'm going to turn it over to Spug. Now, you're not going to start having like a trivia thing with Jerry, are you, Spug?
Well, I would fail miserably at a trivia thing, so.
Okay, well, let me ask this one before he asks. What is the one concert that you can remember going to that when you walked out of it, you went, good God, that was the greatest performance I have ever seen. I can go to the grave happy.
Oh, boy. There's so many more concerts I want to see before I go to the grave.
Oh, well, who's on the Jerry Lynn list of I have to see them before I go?
Actually, coming up in Knoxville in November is Social Distortion.
Oh, cool.
I never got to see them, so I want to go try and
they're
see
great
them before
live.
They retire. Yeah.
I've got to see them twice.
Oh, awesome.
They come to Youngstown twice.
Cool. I always kick myself in the ass. I never went and saw the Ramones because they would come every year and you'd say, I'll go see them next year. Well, too late now.
Well, there's only one left of the Ramones. Isn't it Dee Dee's the only one still left?
Yeah.
It's sad. I have a ton of Ramones on my iPod. But we mentioned Norwegian metal at the opening of the show, and I'm a giant fan of a band from Sweden called Amon Amarth.
I love Amon Amarth.
Here we go.
I've seen them a few times, and I wish they would stop twirling their hair in a circle, because I start getting dizzy watching them.
I've gotten to see them twice, because they only come to the States once every couple of years, and I make sure I find out when they're coming to Cleveland and buy my tickets way in advance, so I can get in.
I just saw him last year in Denver with Goat Horror and Skeleton Witch, and Skeleton Witch was awesome. As soon as they were done, I went to the gimmick table and bought their CD. And I just got their newest one, Breathing the Fire, too.
Angel Witches are really, they're real old school, but the power chords and everything, I'm a big fan. I got to see them with Lazarus AD Skeleton Witch when they came to Cleveland last year.
Cool. Are you making up the names of these bands, man, or are you trying to impress Jerry with your metal knowledge? Because some of these don't.
No, you want to hear some other names?
Oh, like, is there like a single Phil Paramecium out there, and they're touring right now with somebody?
Hell, there's
in. Go ahead.
I was going to say there's In Flames, which is still around. There's you've got Testament,
Dying
which
Fetus.
Is still Dying Fetus. You've got Testament, which is still around. Hatebreed. Killswitch Engage from Columbus, they're always good to see live. I mean, there's tons of metal bands with odd names. Cannibal Corpse.
Mm-hmm. Aborted.
Now this is going to be a naming contest.
Yeah, now we're going to go for what's the dumbest name we can name for a band.
I've got it. Actually, Lance Burn came up with it. Dripping Urethra.
This
is a good one. Jagged Foreskin.
Go ahead, Spug.
My buddy had it. He was going to come up with a metal band. I can't remember the name of it, but he said their first album was going to be titled Raw Seepage After Anal Rape, because that's what it would sound like.
Actually, there's something close to that in the latest Terrorizer magazine.
There's a movie I want to reference real quick. Go ahead, Jerry.
Cenotaph has a CD called Puked Genital Purulency, something like that. And there's a group called Insidious Decrepancy. They're on Corpse Griffle Records out of Texas. They have a song called Rake for the Rake. And a song called Facial Bowel Release.
Wow.
Dude, some of these bands are out there. You mentioned the Fear Factory, which is a great band. I've gotten to see them live once with Slipknot, and it was an awesome show. Have you gotten the chance to see them at all?
Oh, yeah, quite a few times. I actually met them first when I lived in Orlando, and they came through and told them I was using their music, and they loved it. And especially Dino, I got to know Dino pretty well. And when they came through Minneapolis, when I moved back up there, Dino actually called me and had me introduce them on stage, so that was pretty cool.
Now, is there, if you couldn't use Fear Factory as your entrance music, is there another metal band that you would use or another metal song?
Well, I've been using a lot of the indies and the Ring of Honor before they had to switch the music because of TV. Dark Tranquility, Wonders at Your Feet, because it's got that epic sounding beginning, and so it doesn't scare people too much.
I'll have to look that up. Did you say it was Dark Wonders at Tranquility?
Dark Tranquility is
Dark
the name of the group. They're from Sweden also.
What'd you say the name of the song was? I'm seriously going to look that up and throw that on my iPod.
Oh, Wonders at Your Feet.
Wonders at Your Feet.
We should get, we got a country show on the weekends. We should get Jerry to come on the Wild Talk Radio Network and have metal. Like, forget that metal show. We've got that metal show with Jerry Lynn, man, and he's going to blow your mind out with some stuff.
Well, I was thinking about maybe getting on the, Sirius Radio or whatever, the one that Hillbilly Jim has his radio show on.
Sirius Satellite.
Yeah, I was thinking about plugging the idea of them having like a wrestling metal show and really talking about the real underground metal.
I have that you'll never hear on the radio. I have Sirius in my truck. I have Sirius. I would so listen to that.
Now, all the trips that you made with ECW around the place, did you ever go to CBGB in downtown New York? Because you mentioned the Ramones. Did you ever
no,
venture
I never
in that
got
area?
To go there. No, but I did catch a show down in Manhattan at this bar called the Wetlands.
Yep, Wetlands is awesome.
I got to see Sepholic Carnage and Dark Funeral. And I had just missed, I'm brain farting their name now. They used to be Burn the Priest.
Lamb of God?
I just missed Lamb of God. I was so bummed out. I wanted to see them. And this was right, at the start of their big push. But I got to see, The Fall of Carnage was awesome, and Dark Funeral was amazing.
Now, you mentioned all these great bands, and I did mention you do live in Nashville. What's it like to be a hardcore heavy metal fan in not only the belt buckle of the Bible Belt, but in the country music capital of the world, where you'll be sitting somewhere? I went to the Green Hill 16 movie theater, and the woman in front of me dropped something, and it was Naomi Judd. And I'm like, oh, hi, how are you? And is that a little awkward to be in that kind of town with the kind of music you listen to?
It sucks major donkey dick.
Yeah, you ain't exactly going to the Grand Ole Opry going, I want Slipknot. Get that Taylor Swift girl off stage now, brother.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, you're not going to see Cannibal Corpse at the Ryman, Well, then, funny you should mention that. Probably a month or so ago, there was an article in the big Nashville Scene newspaper that shows everything that's going on in town.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big article about how even major, metal acts and stuff, so much music, people on tour will hit Memphis, Louisville, Knoxville, but they'll always skip Nashville.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just annoying. And I think, it could be partially because it's the middle of the Bible Belt, and there's been so many bands in the past, and they come into town to play. There's all kinds of people out protesting. And also, it's had, like you said, the country music's just got a chokehold on this town. So I don't know. I just wonder if there's not a lot of inside political BS going on all the time where all these other bands just aren't welcome here. What? But it said in the article that even the mayor acknowledges this and they're going to try and change this, which would be great because, you could see a lot more stuff, but it's very frustrating.
Well, what metal band do you think could break the ice on that? I think I've seen Metallica play on their tour t-shirts that I have. I think they played in Nashville a few times. But
it's
anything past, anything past
they,
the Black Album is crap anyway.
Whoa.
You know, I stopped listening to them when they became Selloutica. That's just, you know, it's ridiculous.
Well, in that town, let me just jump in real quick, because I did live in the town for a while. Other than Gaylord or Bridgestone, whatever the heck it is, there's an amphitheater somewhere a little south of the city, and then you got the old Municipal and Wyman, and they closed that amphitheater down?
Yeah, and that's where Ozfest came there once. But, what happened was, this is the... some guy bought the thing and was planning on developing it, a bunch of, like, new fancy living area with fancy apartments and, you know, some whole, you know, something to be a, I don't know what he was planning on, but nothing's been done. And right even before he bought that and just tore it all down, there was talks of opening up an amphitheater downtown. So I think it was a big scam to just shut it down and move a lot of the concerts into the Somme Center, which is now the Bridgestone Center.
Yeah.
I think it's just a political move. Someone with a lot of money bought it and just tore it down, and now it just sits there, a vacant lot.
That's pathetic.
I have a quick question, going back to Metallica real quick. Favorite Metallica album, pre-Selloutica?
Sanitarium.
Oh, Justice for All? Yeah.
I like Kill 'Em All.
No, that was
Master of Puppets. I'm sorry, yeah. Master of Puppets, Kill 'Em All, and Master of Puppets are my two favorites.
I think I just lost a little bit of respect. I have to go with Injustice for All. That album is so, it's so angry, and it's so straight to the point with a lot of their songs. I mean, Master of Puppets and Kill 'Em All are great. I have every Metallica album, including the Black Album, and that's it. I like... The Black Album and Before is all I have. I refuse to buy Load and Reload and S&M and Saint Anger, which is a pile of drizzling shit, and the new one, Death Magnetic.
Well, after listening to some of this other metal I have now, I don't think I would use Metallica if I was in an angry mood.
So they've more gone like a corporate rock thing, like a lot of the bands did in the 80s, you think?
Oh, definitely. Well, what really I didn't understand about them was when I went and saw them live years and years ago, they always had a section roped off for people to come and bootleg audio and video of the concerts. I mean, they encouraged it. But then with this whole, what was it called? The whole lawsuit thing with the people.
Napster.
Music and stuff. Yeah, Napster. It was like, to me, that made no sense. When all these years that every concert you put on, you had a section roped off and encouraged people to come and do it, it just made no sense to me all of a sudden, the change in heart, you know?
That was all Lars. It was all Lars. I blame Lars completely.
That's some craziness right there. Mace, you have a question that we have a couple questions we have to get out of the way before we let you go. They're kind of like on our list that if we don't ask them, people get mad at us. So we apologize. I apologize in advance for what these two gentlemen are about to ask you.
Well, the first question basically is, what is the best rib you've either pulled, had pulled on you, or seen pulled on a guy in the locker room?
Oh, well, there's been a lot. There's been, of course, itching powder in someone's underwear while they're out wrestling, so when they come back and get showered up and changed, they get a little surprise. There's been an open can of sardines underneath the driver's seat to someone's car. There's been, Limburger cheese on someone's engine block in the middle of winter, so when they turn on the heater, it stinks up the whole car. I've shaved off an eyebrow, but only one, so then they got to do the other one themselves when they find out. But this particular individual didn't find out for like 3 days. So he ran around for 3 days missing an eyebrow and didn't even know it.
What?
Does that satisfy the gentleman from Australia and Cleveland, or do you want him to get R-rated, which we've already done that anyway?
All right, that's what he wants to answer. That's what he answers.
Okay, so I apologize for the question that Spoke is about to ask. I'm not a big fan of it, but he's a contributor, so we let him ask it. Spoke?
Because it's an interesting question.
Oh, man. Oh, no. Yeah, but Martin Scorsese doesn't get asked this at seminars, dude.
And oh, if I were at it.
President.
and if I were at a seminar that Scorsese was at, I would totally ask this question. Because I have no shame. Now, on all the social networking sites and dating sites, you always see the question, you can tell a lot about a person by the underwear that they wear. I like to change that. If Jerry Lynn were a pair of underwear, what kind of underwear would he be?
I'll just take that as what kind of underwear do I wear?
Fair enough.
Hanes, what do you call them? They're not really like, they're sort of like bikini briefs, but they're not like total nut crunchers.
So Jerry Lynn is a nut hugger. All right.
Yeah, sort of. You know, when I'm relaxing at home, then I'll throw on some boxers.
Fair enough, sir. Fair
enough. All right. And on that note, I got to get going here because dinner has been ready for about a half hour. So.
All right. It is this Sunday, 1 o'clock, HWA Arena, located at 111 Blue Valley Road. The main event on the show is the Notorious K.I.D. Kid Cash taking on Tommy Mercer. Also involved, the Crippled Jeff Daniels, Boogie Woogie Boy, Gary Valiant, the Psycho Medic, as he mentioned, Dante Timbernest of the Wild Boys, the Ben Jordan involved, Playboy James Duncan, Jamie Dundee. Definitely, if you're in Nashville, if you live in Columbia, Lawrenceburg, anywhere, get in a car. Go see Jerry Lynn. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
All righty. Coming up after the break, we go from one great personality to another. The former WCW, WWE, TNA star, the one and only Booker T will be joining us. Online World of Wrestling Radio. We'll be back.
Thursday night, the Wild Talk Radio Network becomes a place where anything goes. Prepare to be simple. Thursday, 10:30 p.m. Eastern. On the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Today.
Rob.
Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christy Page, Brett Derry.
Anderson Stout. Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal. Brett the Hitman Hart.
Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the $1 million man.
All Hoagies, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Van Der Boogie Wiggumist.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson, Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith.
Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling. Online.
Here's a great way to stay up to date with the Wild Card Radio Network. Sign up for the official WTR newsletter. That's right, Wild Talk Radio now has an official newsletter, the only place to keep up to date on the goings-on in the WTR universe. From show previews, exclusive interviews with the hosts and celebrities, and special contests just for those who sign up. Submit your email address and subscribe today to the WTR newsletter.
This is Lacey Von Erich. You're listening to The Network, Tim Steinbilt, Wild Talk Radio.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Welcome back to the second hour of Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you the Wild Talk Radio Network. 877-588-9877, option one is the way to join us on the show. We want to thank Jerry Lynn for joining us. Definitely check out his event in Laverne, Tennessee. If you live anywhere in lower New York, Long Island, Philadelphia, New Jersey, you probably have seen advertising for the Legends of the Ring event. It is taking place this Saturday at the Crown Plaza Hotel, exit 8A off the New Jersey Turnpike. That is in Monroe, New Jersey. There are tons and tons of guests that are going to be involved in that event. LegendsoftheRing.com is how you can find out about who will be there. However, we are honored to have had a gentleman join us here tonight. He has been a multi-time champion around the world for several promotions and has his own facility in, I believe, Houston, Texas, that you can actually get trained by this man and his brother. He is formerly of Harlem Heat, and he is a king, and he's got so many accolades. Booker T is joining us. Good evening, and welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How are you guys doing tonight?
Oh, we're doing excellent, and we're very honored that you're able to join us here tonight. You're going to be appearing at this event from 11 to 2, that night before, there's a ring roast for the legendary Jim Cornette. If you could give a did you ever interact with Jim in all your years in the business, and what is he like as a person?
He's a character. He's definitely a character. He's one of a kind, you know, sense was on his mind, definitely, of course, in my eyes, he's good people.
Will you possibly attending that night with him and seeing who gets him with the heaviest lumber in the rib party, or are you avoiding going to watch that?
No, that's not my deal right there. You know what I mean? I love Jim Cornette, and I definitely love the wrestling business, but, you know, as far as the ribbing and the stories and whatnot, you know, I never got in the business for that. I really never knew about that side of the business until I got in it. And sometimes, it could be a joke that you really don't like, you know.
There were rumors going around with this weekend's TNA event that the Bay at one point was to be the main event mafia coming back in with you and Scott Steiner, Sting, Kevin Nash. Take us through the creative process in that event. What was it like when they came to you and said, this is the grouping we're going to do, and you get to do, Booker, what whatever you want on camera. What was it nice to have that kind of freedom, and what was it like to be with that collection of talent?
Well, you know, it was great, actually, to be with that, you know, group of guys, going back to my WCW days, you know, Sting, you know, Scotty, Kev, you know, we were actually, you know, we were a group, you know, pretty much, part of the same cloth, so to speak. That part right there was great. I thought the idea was, a really, really good idea as well, you know, as far as, you know, you know, it was a pretty much a formula that, you know, really can't go wrong if you do it right. You know, the older guys, you know, which are trying to, you know, hang on to their spot, and the younger guys coming up, you know, trying to take it. So I really thought it was a really, really good concept to begin with. But I just thought the direction, you know, of the Main Event Mafia and what it really stood for, you know, got off track a little bit.
Yeah, Booker, I was still a big fan of yours. Sort of first saw your character in WCW like a lot of us did. I'm just wondering, your best of series, best of seven series with Chris Benoit back in 98 was considered one of the best feuds at that time. And I remember that you did it again with Chris many years later in WWE. In your personal opinion, which series with him was sort of the better one that you guys put on?
Of course, the first one was the best. It was really hard to recreate something like that and, go out there and do it like you did it the first time, because the first time we were, you know, trying to prove a point. We were, trying to, not just to ourselves, but to the fans as well, you know, that we belong, you know, in that Main Event picture. It's given a chance. It's just given a shot and the opportunity, you know. So, the second time was, you know, I'm about to say, just trying to recreate something from the first time, like, you know, kind of like TNA trying to create WCW all over again. You know, it's just something that would never happen. You know, you got to let the past stand the past, I think, sometime.
I have an email question from radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com. It actually came from two people. One is a gentleman here in Tampa named Jason Davis, and the other came from a gentleman you know pretty well from WCW and also Global, and that would be Scott Hudson. Wanted to know, what was your initial memories of being in Global, and do you happen to know who owns the tape library? Because there was some really, really great stuff that the fans deserve to see.
You know, I got a lot of great memories, but as far as the library go, I really don't know who has the rights to that, that footage or anything, but, there's a lot of it. I hope I can get my hands on it sometime. I actually got a little bit of some of the matches that I've, done there, but, I remember a lot of great memories. One night, we were in a tag match with, Manny Fernandez and, Cowboy Jerry Mantel, and, a fan actually hit, Manny Fernandez over the head with a bottle, literally a glass bottle, and split him open. And we were the good guys, we were the baby faces, and a riot almost started in the sportatorium that night, and it was probably 2,500 people there, you know, and it was a great night, you know, for us, you know, because it was something that we had created. Of course, I remember vividly winning the Global Tag Team Championship with my brother. And, you know, really changing the whole name of the game as far as the way they, you know, looked at us, down in Dallas, you know, because when my brother and I first went to Dallas, it wasn't a pretty sight, you know, there was a lot of racism, a lot of negative, words, were said, but when in the end, you know, 2 years later, we was, Dallas favorite sons, and, you know, we had changed a lot of people's attitudes and a lot of people's minds about the way they should look at things.
Would you have liked to have been there during the Von Erich, Freebird, Gino Hernandez era at all, or was that not something you and Stevie would have liked to have been a part of?
You know, I don't think I would have liked to have been a part of it back then. You know, I think the time was a little bit too early for someone with a mentality like myself. I've always been outspoken. Probably would have got fired, you know, pretty quick, you know, because I've always been outspoken. I've always said what was on my mind, you know, I've always believed in, and I'm down, got to be able to speak up.
Now, you were part of an extremely successful tag team with your brother Stevie, but you were also a part of a extremely well-known tag team with Dustin Reynolds, Goldust. What was it like to work with him and some of the crazy stuff you guys did together?
You know, me and Goldie was, we were like the odd couple. You know, we were totally not supposed to be as successful as we were, doing the things that we were doing, you know. But my thing was always to be given the situation and just try to make the best of the situation. And me and Goldie was actually good friends. So it was easy for us to go out there and, you know, make fun of ourselves and just try to make people, laugh, and then keep it serious when we needed to, In the beginning, it goes us and Booker T was a joke, but what I remember the most about Booker T and Goes Us tonight that we separated, a lot of fans literally had tears in their eyes, so they loved it just as much as we did.
Now, I have a quick follow up to that, I'm sorry. When you were together with him, and I remember the angle where he had been electrocuted and would stutter horribly, how hard was it not to just bust out laughing in some of those vignettes you guys did together when he started in with that?
I'm hoping WWE put out a bloopers, CD one day. They just have to, let the ego go for a bit and do that. But there was a lot of behind-the-scenes footage, that we just couldn't keep from laughing, in the middle of a tape, we would just start laughing because it was just that funny, it was like watching a whole, in living color, I'm sure those guys couldn't, do that stuff without actually laughing at themselves and having to redo it time and time and over again, So that was the good part about Booker T and Goldust.
Booker T joining us here on All I Will of Wrestling Radio. The number is 877-588-9877, option 1. And it looks like we do have someone on the line. Welcome to the show. Your name and where you're calling from.
This is the Psycho Medic again from Nashville.
Ah, good evening, sir. You have a question for Booker T.
Yeah. First of all, Booker, it's a pleasure to speak with you, man. I've watched you for a long time before I even got into business myself.
I appreciate it, bro.
Oh, no problem. First question I've always wondered, what was it like for you and your brother Stevie Ray to work with Sherry Martel?
I always give Sherry Martel the utmost respect, as far as making, Booker T and Stevie Ray a legitimate tag team, we couldn't wait, when they actually said that we may have a chance of being with Sherry Martel and her being our manager. We knew Sherry had managed the tag teams of the past, the great tag team wrestlers, the great singles wrestlers, as well as been a great women's champion in her own right. So we knew getting with Sherry was a signature, behind us saying that we was ready to do that. And and I think Hulk Hogan at the time actually was one of the people who suggested, the idea. Jimmy Hart, was one of the people who suggested the idea of Sherry Martel. There was a couple of other people named that were in there also. But Sherry got to kick it out, and thank God she did, because she made Harlem Heat what we were, especially being able to work in the South. And a lot of those towns, were, two black guys and a white woman, that was just something that they just, despised, and we were the ultimate bad guys, all of us.
Well, speaking of that, me being a black professional wrestler in the indie circuit, I've only been working in the business 6.5 years, and I've taken a lot from some of the indie workers around here in my state, which is Tennessee, like Jamie Dundee or like Jerry Lynn and folks like that I've watched and I've always listened to. And Booker, I started late. I started when I was 35 years old, and I'm 41 now. Let me ask you this, and I'm going to leave it at that. What advice would you have for me? Because I do want to broaden my horizons, for a little bit, because I don't know how much longer that I will be in this business, being at the age that I am. What advice would you have for me to do that?
Well, my advice to you, man, is I always said, I've used him as an example, the Boogeyman. He's a good friend of mine. He got into business at 40, and it was just something that he had a passion for, and that's the key word right there. It's passion. If you got a passion to do something, you're doing it not for the money. You're doing it because of the love of being able to do it. And if you just happen to, you know, have enough talent, you know, somebody may can use you in a position. You know, I say try to explore Japan, you know, try to explore Mexico, try to meet people and network, because that's really the only way you're going to be able to get yourself out there.
All right. Thanks to the Psychomet for calling in. 877-588-9877, option one. Booker T is our guest right now. He will be appearing at the Legends of the Ring convention this Saturday at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Monroe, New Jersey. You can see him from 11 to 2. Go to legendsoftheRing.com. They have a wonderful list of everyone that is there for this event. Jersey Girl in our chat room wanted to know, I can't believe I'm about to ask this, what was going through your mind when you did the now infamous grocery store brawl with Stone Cold Steve Austin?
I don't know. You know, it was crazy. You know, it was something that we had to do. We had to get it done in one take. You know, and like I said, I'm a perfectionist. I always want to make things the best I possibly can, you know, and Steve and I, we got a pretty good chemistry, you know, as far as the whole thing that we did together. It was pretty good and culminated with, you know, that incident in the grocery store, which was something to this day people still, you know, ask me about on a regular basis, about the grocery store incident, you know. But it was crazy. You know, it was actually a real grocery store, you know. They closed it down, and actually we just tore it up. We just literally tore the grocery store up and tried our best not to kill ourselves at the same time and entertain, you know, fans like yourself.
Now, I just want to know, going back into the annals of WCW and your career there once again, your first heavyweight title win was at Bash at the Beach 2000, coming off the whole Vince Russo swerve angle thing that happened there. Just wondering, did you feel that because of that whole swerve angle that sort of lessened your first big moment in WCW, or was it just, holy crap, I've got the title now, you know, just sort of a sudden feel?
You know, it really didn't change my moment, you know, to be honest. I can honestly say that because myself, honestly, I never in a million years thought I would win the WCW title. That's not something that was in my mindset. I always just thought about going out entertaining, you know, and, you know, just trying to entertain to the utmost of my ability. And that pretty much put me in a position to win the title. That night, I actually didn't know I was going to wrestle until about 10 minutes before I actually wrestled for the title. I was pretty much, I wrestled earlier that night against Chris Canyon, God rest his soul. But then I got lost that match, actually. And then I had to wrestle him at the end of the night, you know, which was a surprise to me. I really didn't know I was going to wrestle, but it was a great night for me. It was a great night. It was something that I remember for the rest of my life, you know. You know, to win it, you know, it proved, you know, not only to myself that I was, you know, good enough to be in that position, but the fans pretty much gave me that stamp of approval and said, man, you know, Booker T finally got the title, you know, after, you know, 7 years of, you know, a lot of hard work.
Booker T is our guest on Iowa Wrestling Radio. You were featured pretty prominently on Jeff Jarrett's King of the Mountain DVD, which was a four-disc set talking about companies like you had mentioned, and I'm paraphrasing instead of going word for word, the fly-by-night promotions, that they're here a day, gone forever. When you were working, I believe you were working for WWE at the time, when you first heard of the concept of TNA wrestling and eventually went to it, would you have gone to work for them back in 2002 and 3 and 4 when they were in Nashville on a weekly pay-per-view basis? Would you have liked to have done something like that? Or were you thinking along the lines of, let me see where they are in another year or two?
No, I really never thought about TNA, to be honest. until, you know, I got a chance to go there when I left WWE. My thing was always test the waters and see exactly how good I was. That has always been, you know, my thing in the business. It's never been about, you know, certain companies or anything. It's been about the competition, you know, and being able to, you know, wrestle against the, you know, the best wrestlers out there in the world, you know, and those guys at that time was at WWE, especially after he had bought, you know, WCW at that time, you know. So it was my time to go to WWE at that time. When I went to TNA, it was my time to, you know, to go there as well, you know. So I look at things, you know, for myself, you know, and timing has just been, you know, right for me in certain situations.
Now, Booker, I know you got to get out of here soon. You said you had some babies to take care of. And as a dad, I know that. I know that feeling.
I got a couple more minutes. I mean, you guys got a couple more questions there.
But we have a standard stock question that we ask everybody because it's always fun to hear stories.
Uh-oh.
You've been all over the world. You've been in several different locker rooms, and you've been around some pretty crazy characters. What is the best rib that you have seen pulled, had pulled on you, or been a part of?
You know, I can honestly actually say I haven't been a part of a lot of ribs in the business, other than when, you know, related to the clothes in the shower and, you know, and gluing his suit to the wall. But other than that right there, I really haven't had a whole lot of stories. My one vivid memory is when I first got the business. I was on the road. I was at WCW, and I was green. I was, you know, fairly new in the company within my first year, and I was dealing with a lot of guys who actually did a lot of ribs, you know, and stuff like that. But it was something I didn't know about coming from where I came from and coming up the way I did in the business. I never got ribbed before. I guess because I was always, you know, hothead, and I was always, you know, willing to fight, you know what I mean? And most guys that get ribbed, they're not willing to fight, you know what I mean? So that's why they get ribbed. But the first time I ever got ribbed, I was in some town, I can't even remember what town, it was in the South. We were on like a 21-day loop with WCW. Like I said, we were driving, you know, all of these towns as well. Like I said, just my brother and I, and at that time, breaking into the business, you know, we wasn't making a lot of money, you know, so we was, you know, rooming together, you know, we was, you know, like I said, driving everywhere, you know, no flights or anything like that. And I remember driving for about 7 hours to get to this one town. We finally got there, and we had eaten for some reason. I was rushing to get there, something had happened. And we finally got to the building, and it was myself, you know, Max Payne, you know, Nick Patrick, the referee, you know, Chris Benoit, Too Cold Scorpio, my brother, you know, a bunch of the other guys, you know, was in the locker room, and this kid, and I said, hey, man, I gave him $20 bill, I said, hey, man, go get me a couple of hot dogs, man, I'm saying, you know, I'll be right here, you know, just, you know, getting a couple of hot dogs and a Coke, you know, and, cause I was, like, starving, like, crazy, literally, I had a headache, and when I don't eat, I get, like, huge migraine headaches, literally, when I get sick. So I really wasn't in a good mood to be ribbed that day. And what happened was I'm sitting there talking to Kimbo Scorpio because I was going to be wrestling that night. And finally, about 20 minutes go by, I'm like wondering what this kid is. And finally, I walk in the hallway and I see the kid walk by. I say, hey, man, what my hot dogs at? You know, he goes, oh, man, I brought them to you. And he comes in the dressing room and he goes, I put them right here. And when he looks at the place where he put them at, they were gone. And I'm like, Steve, and he put my chains there as well. The money was gone. So I'm like fuming, like wondering who got my, you know, hot dog cursed, and I'm going crazy now, you know. I'm going, I'm telling these guys, look, I'm not the one to play with, you know. I'm like, you know, from the street, you know. I went into my mode, you know, my street mode, you know. Totally forgot, you know, where I was. And then Chris Benoit, they're playing his music. He walks by me, he's got mustard on his lip. You know, just playing and playing sight, you know, like, he just finished eating the hot dogs, you know. And and this is before I actually knew Chris Benoit, years before the Best of Seven. And I asked him, I said, I didn't say, did you steal my hot dogs? Did you steal my, a fucking hot dog, you know? And he goes, no. And he just walks right past me. And goes to the ring. And I'm fuming. I'm like going crazy, man. I'm like, oh, man, he just dissed me and he ate my hot dog just with my change. And I'm asking my brother, he like, he didn't see anything, you know. So I'm really hot. I'm mad at everybody now. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to show him exactly what kind of person. So as soon as he walks back in the dressing room from, you know, having his back, I said, I'm going to show him. I said, man, I'm not doing it. So I'm walking around, I'm going crazy. And Max Payne, he goes, Book, don't do it, man. Book, you don't want to fight him, man. I said, you're going to get fired. You just got me company. And Nick Patrick, he's telling me, God, Book, man, it's not working, man. It's just some hot dogs, man. You know, I was like, oh, man, it's my money, man. It's my hot dogs. I'm like, man, y'all just leaving. I was like, I'm going to show everybody, you know. And so a waiter comes to the dressing room. And before he comes to the dressing room, I walk back over, and my hot dogs and my Coke and my money is sitting there. So I'm so mad now. I'm so mad. My hunger done went away. I pick up my change. I leave the hot dogs and the Coke there because I got a phobia. I don't like people passing with my food, so I couldn't eat it. So I'm still wanting to kill somebody. I knew it wasn't Benoit, so I couldn't kill him. He walks back in the dress room. You know, so I'm so mad. I didn't speak to anybody. And the next day, the boys brought me a whole 8-pack of hot dogs and hot dog buns and mustard, you know, and, you know, told me not to get so upset about my hot dogs.
That's
so, you know, it was a major rib, but it was, like I said, it was the first time I had ever got ribbed, and you know, I only got it one time after that, and it was with the Nasty Boys.
Oh God.
Yeah.
That's almost as good as Kenny King. That's up there with Kenny King.
Kenny King had a story involving El Generico of Ring of Honor and Brian Danielson and a fake stabbing. I'm just like, okay, nobody's going to top that one. I think we got pretty close.
My fun loving, it ain't all over the top or anything like that, but like I said, I did want to kill somebody.
Mace wanted to ask you something before we let you go. Go ahead, Mace.
Yeah, I know that you have your training facility out in Houston, if I remember correctly, with Stevie Ray. I'm just wondering, you know, you went on to WWE and TNA after your run in WCW was over, but Stevie sort of disappeared. Besides the training center, what else has he been up to? You know, why haven't we seen him anywhere since WCW went down?
You know, my brother, he's an enigma, you know, I mean, he's kind of off to himself. Actually, it's just Booker T Pro Wrestling Academy, you know, and, you know, if anybody wanted any information on that, you go to BookerTPWA.com. But my brother, he got a trucking company, and, you know, he, back in 2000, you know, he got out of the business, he had a daughter, you know, and she was pretty much at a really young age at that time, you know, and, you know, I can understand him, you know, wanting to get off the road and, you know, be with his daughter, you know, I mean, it's something I missed out on when I was, you know, coming up in my wrestling heyday, you know, my son. I had, a son, you know, single parent, and I missed a lot of time out on him, and it affected our relationship even to this day, you know. That's why now, you know, with my twins, you know, I want to be around the house a whole lot more. That's why I'm a dad now, instead of being out there wrestling on a weekly basis.
The event is at the Crown Plaza Hotel, legendsofthering.com. Definitely stop by. There will be photo ops. You can bring items for Booker T to sign. Will you sign a bottle of shampoo? Because that seems to be one of the weirdest angles in your career, was a feud with Edge over shampoo.
You mean out of size shampoo, hungry man boxes, you know, whatever they need, man. I'll be there to sign it for them. You know, that's really what it's about right now. You know, as far as, you know, my career goes, you know, there's been a lot of fans out there that supported me. you know, for my 20 years in professional wrestling, and, you know, they still not support me, you know, so whatever they want, you know, they're going to get, you know, it's really all about them, you know, it's really not about me, you know, and this part of my career, like I said, to get up close and personal with my fans is the best part, you know. I got a book coming out in 2011 as well, you know, so I'll be trying to reach the fans from a different perspective, you know, from that side also.
All right, tickets, general admission are $15. There is a super ticket available for $200. Go to legendsoftheRing.com. Thanks to Booker T for joining us. Stay with us after the break. From one Legends of the Ring guest to the man who's running Ring Rose 3 with Jim Cornette, Sean Oliver will be with us coming up after the break on Online World and Wrestling Radio.
Quick message going to all the geeks out there. If you want to listen to three guys talk your language, tune in to Otaku Talk Live, Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. What? You expect me to be funny? We do that on the show! So tune in! Listen! I demand it. You know, the more things change, the more things stay the same. For as long as the internet wrestling community has been around, there have been people and internet radio shows that will bitch and complain about every little thing they see. Well, the crew over at WrestleTalk Radio are trying to change that by highlighting the positives of each and every WWE and TNA event. These wrestlers put their body on the line to entertain us each and every week. So how about we praise them instead of bitching about the little things that get to us? So with that in mind, you should come listen to WrestleTalk Radio Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, or right after any WWE or TNA pay-per-view, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Because this is how we say thank you to those that entertain us.
Looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans? Then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forum. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions. As well, there are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown. It's the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forum, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Welcome back to Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network and Click Wrestle on Demand, where you can find the podcasts of this and each and every show. Also, iTunes is a neat way to transport us around on the John Lennon, Beatles, Julian Lennon night here. We're going to switch gears, and as we talked with Booker T about the events this coming weekend in Monroe, New Jersey at the Crown Plaza Hotel, if you're going to be there that entire weekend,
this gentleman that we're going to speak with is very important to you because Kayfabe commentaries, along with the Legends of the Ring, are presenting Ring Roast number 3. Now, if you didn't attend 1 and 2, which were the Iron Sheik and Terry Funk, you want to be at this one because this is the legendary Jim Cornette being on. And he's done plenty of DVDs for the gentleman we're going to bring on, and we're happy to have him back again, the one and only Sean Oliver joining us. Good evening, sir. Thank you for taking time for us.
Oh, no, it's always a pleasure. You know, in considering Ring Roast and its place in wrestling as being the singular most unpredictable evening in wrestling these days, anything can happen with Jim Cornette, couldn't it? I mean, could we have concocted a better recipe for an unpredictable evening?
Well, the guy called Vince Russo out for a boxing match, Sean.
You know, that was unbelievable. I said to Jim, I said, listen, I can't sanction a fight, and I certainly can't have one break out again at the roast. But I can engage you two in a friendly wrestling debate, if you like, someday. Certainly wouldn't be as exciting as if Vince Russo showed up for the fight. We did send out invitations. Have not heard back yet.
He's a little busy with creative problems in his company, so he's a little held up right now.
Yeah, but we'll see. You never know. We have 4 days. He may call me.
And now the lineup for the roast, as again hosted by the legendary Bill Apter. I'm going to run them off real quick, and if I'm missing people, you can let me know. Both Loverboy Dennis and Beautiful Bobby of the Minette Express will be there. Al Snow, Bob Holly, Dutch Mantel, Nick Dinsmore, Prince Nana, Ryan Marr, Sean Carucci, Missy Hyatt, Amy Lee, and Sean Morton. Anybody that's been added that we want to let the fans know about, or the more surprise element than anything?
I think you nailed it.
Now, hopefully Mr. Apter will not be in a dress this year. You scared many residents of the Kayfabe Commentaries community with that. Did we lay any guidelines out for Bill this year?
Despite both wishes and intent, I will not allow him to be in drag.
Okay, so no Mama Cornette impersonations, thank the maker.
You know what's funny,
Cornette
is actually... Bill for Bob. That's funny that you say that.
Now, if Cornette had said no, who was your backup for Ring Roast 3? Did you have one at all, or was it always Cornette, yes, yes, you're doing this, whether you like it or not?
I think I'm correct in saying every year we've gotten the first person we wanted. It was Cornette all the way. He was a little trepidatious at first. He said, you know, I've heard about those things up there, those roasts you do. I said, come on. I said, let me send you some videos, take a look at it, some DVDs, take a look at it. And it's good, clean fun. And he came on board, and... he's the perfect, perfect candidate for it.
Now, according to ringroast.com, the standard ticket is $30. Go into exactly what the VIP package gets a fan for the $100 that they're paying.
Right. The general admission is $30 unless you grab a four-pack. If you can round up three more friends, that's $100. It comes to $25 a ticket. The VIP package is $100 per ticket. It entitles you to a private one-hour meet and greet with the stars at 7 o'clock, before an hour before the show. You get something signed. And then that also is a front row ticket for the actual event. So at 8 o'clock, when the event starts, you'll step out into the ballroom for your front row seat for the show. So it's a one-hour meet and greet with all the stars of the show. and then a front row seat. So I think that's a tremendous, tremendous bargain and a very popular ticket. I mean, they're always the first to go. I think there's only four. Terrence emailed me today. I think there's only four left. We limited to around 30 or so that everybody gets some time with the stars in that 1 hour. We don't want it to be too crowded back there because, you know, we want everybody to get their gimmicks signed and whatever they bring, get some pictures taken with everyone or talk to them, whatever they want to do. So we do want to give them proper alone time, if you will, with the stars. So that VIP ticket, there's just a couple left. I don't know, maybe gone by the time this airs, I'm not sure. But ringroast.com is the place to go for all the pricing, and to place your order.
And that DVD Monroe, New Jersey is where it'll be. Crown Plaza, I believe, is the hotel, right?
Yes, Friday night, this Friday, October 15th.
And the Ring Roast DVD is usually the November release? Is that the tentative sometime in November?
November 26th, yeah.
Okay. Now, the September release, which my review will be hitting the internet in a couple days, is another chapter in the timeline history of the WWE series, and 1988's choice is the legendary, and yes, I can actually use legendary with him. I get yelled at by somebody going, you call everybody legendary, why do you do that? Well, he is. Hacksaw Jim Duggan was the choice for 1988. If I know I just asked this question with the ring roast, but if Hacksaw had said no, who would you have chosen as number two for 1988? And it's not knocking Hacksaw, because Jim Duggan is a great guest, but who would have been plan B?
Wow, that's a great question. I don't know that I have an answer for it, to be honest with you. I'd have to defer to my main researcher, Anthony, on that. Hacksaw, I believe the way that came up, there's a handful of names that'll work for any year.
Mm-hmm.
You start with that. You start with who was prominent in the company. Then you move to who has some decent recall. If you're going back 20 years or so, it has to be somebody who's able to remember yesteryear. And that does eliminate a fair portion of the wrestling population. But the 88, okay, let me see if I can answer this for you. 88, who would have worked in 88 if it wasn't Hacksaw? See, there's an entertainment factor, too. You want somebody who's interesting to listen to. I couldn't give you an answer off the cuff.
Savage, maybe?
I was going to say Savage. I could go through the dream list, but Savage could work for any number of years. Savage, Steamboat. Anyone that was working high enough on the card to have some knowledge of office workings that didn't just involve their angles. That's the thing about this series. I don't only want them to talk about the angles and situations that they were involved in. It's got to kind of be a comprehensive compilation of the history of the company down the road. So when your shelf has 25 editions of it, one representing each year, it's got to be told by people with enough insight and would have had enough company knowledge. So generally, that's the people working high enough on the card that they're at all the major shows, they're at all the major pay-per-views, they're at all the major TV tapings to bear witness to anything that would have happened, whether it was something in the ring or Jacques Rougeau knocking four of Dynamite Kid's teeth out, as is discussed in this edition.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, now, how reluctant was Jim into bringing up the infamous New Jersey arrest with the Iron Sheik? Because he talks about it very honestly, and I was sitting there watching going, wow, I wonder if this was like a make or break with Sean. Was it that kind of a situation, or was he very open and said, let's just get it out there, here's what happened?
You know, Jim wasn't hesitant at all in talking about anything. Truth be told, the arrest was in 87. It comes up and it's relevant because the Sheik comes back in 88 after being, quote-unquote, fired. I don't know if anyone's ever fired from that company. Put it out to pasture for, you know, a few months and put in rehab or whatever. But it becomes relevant because that's when the Sheik comes back. I don't think it was entirely
him that he would have been talking about this because it was discussed with his agent as part of the pitch for the series. So I think he knew he was going to talk about it, and I don't think he was hesitant at all.
Now, you guys have this relationship with, and do you guys have a relationship with law enforcement in that state? Because you had Jamie Dundee on for you shoot, and then a little later he gets busted. You were on a couple of months ago and mentioned that you had Sean Waltman set up for you shoot, and then all of a sudden that weekend it comes out Sean got busted. I mean, are you on the payroll? Are you a narc, Sean Oliver?
That's very funny. Yeah, we're moles, not moles. We're undercover. We're informants, is what we are. That's funny though. On more than one occasion, Jamie returned home and was arrested the following day. Actually, that night when his plane landed, shortly after his plane landed, Sean Waltman was shot a very, very intense edition of You Shoot, which will be available a week from Tuesday. What is this? What will that be? A week from Tuesday? The 19th, I guess? 19th. Next Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and then I read the following day, Port Authority police arrest him for possession of marijuana. Go figure. We had nothing to do with it. So I was eyewitness to the fact that he was carrying a very small amount of what did appear to be a green leafy substance. I can't speak with any degree of certainty as to just what that substance was. But he fared very well in the roller joint competition, which is, of course, just a prop. It is tobacco that is rolled for that, lest anyone think that we're doing anything salacious or unsavory or illegal. The entire what's in the bag, they're all gimmicks, although I'd love to have to explain that someday if I'm pulled over and they come across that bag, the what's in the bag.
So as everybody remembers, if you've watched all the You Shoot, Sabu is the record holder in the Roll the Joint Challenge. We're definitely going to check this out to see how close Sean gets to Sabu's record. And as you said, how can you preview how intense it got? Was it a particular subject or subject group that made that bothered Sean, or was it kind of like a cathartic therapy thing for him?
That's a good way to describe it, Alan. He's a fan of the series, so I knew this in advance that he was a big issue mark, and he had asked to get in touch with us in the past. We didn't have anything at the time, so when we finally hooked up here, he was pretty excited, and I think he knew the drill, and he knew the show, and he knew what was going to come up. You'll see. The first question I asked him, it's some wrestling-related question about getting started in the business or something like that. He just looked at me and he goes, so we start with the softball ones, like you're just putting the tip in me right now, huh? I said, yeah, we just slipped the tip in at first. So he knew what was coming, and he was so honest, maybe too honest, about Joni, about his own history with drugs and drug abuse and his continued struggles, about he and Joni's relationship, and a lot of things that, you know, we will disclaimer by saying these are the recollections and accounts of Sean Waltman alone. We can't speak to any, confirm or deny the truth of any of what he was saying about some of Joni's habits and some of the things she had put forth in her book, which he kind of blows the cover off on. But he talks about it. And also his suicide attempt, which was probably just minutes away from being a done deal. He was clinically dead, as I understand it, and as he tells us, and was found by his girlfriend and revived. So it wasn't a cry for help. It was, it's pretty intense. It's not as maudlin as I'm making it sound. We do touch on that stuff, but all the fun stuff is there too, Alan. Let's not gloss over that. We're playing the whole bag. We're playing What a Dick. We have a cooking segment, the first ever. We're going to air this clip tonight on our website. It's called the KC Cooking Channel, The Shit Sandwich. He will make a proper shit sandwich for us on camera. Where to place the shit in between the meat. Yeah, it's a nice cooking segment, an homage to the Cooking Network. we're going to put that clip up tonight, Tuesday night, on the website. You'll be able to pre-order the DVD. The whole bag is there, and all the fun games you've come to expect from a U-Shoot.
All this on the Rachel Ray Show, now available in syndication. Oh, my God.
Exactly.
When we last talked, is the December release still the guest booker, Dutch Mantel, the TNA years, or has that changed?
No, that's still calm, and the TNA Exposed, it's called. You're going inside the booking rooms at TNA, and you're going to hear about it all. And Dutch was there for the tumultuous Rocky days in the past few years, particularly when Cornette was there. And that whole power shift, and it's going to be a tremendous addition coming to you in December. The return of guest booker. It'll be a big guest booker year, 2011.
Absolutely. Also, the Kayfabe Memories forum that you can access through kayfabecommentaries.com, one of the interactions you had with readers was the next couple folks in the Timeline series. We confirmed last time you were on that it is Ivory. Lisa Moretti is going to be doing 2000 or 2001?
2001.
Okay, and can we confirm Greg the Hammer Valentine supposedly is involved in this series at some point?
Greg's got 1985. That should be coming out at some point next year. Jim Cornette will be doing 1997, which was a very newsworthy year.
Oh, yeah.
For WWE. And Corny was on creative, so he was there for all of it. Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, all of it. And he, on camera, will open his WWE agent binder and go through all of the intricate details that were logged in his journal that they give you with WWE when you're an agent. So he, on camera, will show this and we'll pour over the year 1997 like never before.
And Jerry McDivitt will be standing by to make phone calls to you, I'm sure.
come on, Jerry. There's another one. We got another one, too. What am I missing with Timeline? There's another Timeline there, too. Ivory, Valentine, Cornette. We're in talks. Probably will be a Val Venus one. Oh, I can't say that. I have to say Sean Morley, don't I? Yes, I do. Sean Morley also.
Oh, Sean will be definitely an interesting guest, especially if he comes in the bath towel. That would be interesting to have him walk in and just say, hello, Kayfabe. I'm like, oh, God, it's him. It's the guy with the towel.
There are some in my industry that would enjoy that. I don't happen to be one of them.
All right. Wanted to also mention that through KayfabeCommentaries.com and Lord of the Rings, Legends of the Ring convention that you guys set up, and I believe it's with Big DADDJ at Comcast.net, that at this convention, Midnight Express of Beautiful Bobby and Loverboy Dennis are going to be doing an autograph appearance? How did this happen? Was this Cornette's doing, the convention?
Well, we're getting them together for the roast, as is fitting, and it's been a while since the two of them were together, so they are going to be our vendor guests at the Kayfabe Commentaries table the following day on Saturday at the Legends of the Ring. Actually, they're both of our vendor guests, Legends of the Ring and Kayfabe Commentaries. They'll be at our table signing and taking photos, and you'll get to step in and hold the racket. With the Express, baby, we're putting the racket in your hand and get your photo taken. With Loverboy Dennis and Beautiful Bobby. We thought that was a great opportunity. We're even taking mail order if somebody's got a bill. If you live in Seattle and you're not going to be out here for the convention this weekend, it may be a little late. You're going to have to overnight it, but we have a service. You can send us the stuff about the magazine, photo, maybe Cornette's new book, whatever you want. We'll have the tag team sign it, and we will ship it back. That information is all available at our website, kayfabecommentaries.com.
And speaking of websites, we got an email, I pre-told a couple friends that you were going to be coming on, and they sent me some emails at radio@onlinewellerwrestling.com, and one of them was, we saw about Loverboy Dennis and Beautiful Bobby, but other than Jim Cornette mentioning him on the You Shoot DVDs, nobody ever hears of Sweet Stan Lane. Was Stan ever contacted by you guys or Cornette to be a part of this, and what was his response?
Yeah, we wanted to, that was the goal, and his mother's in very poor health. He is her sole caretaker. We certainly would, and he well, but he couldn't leave her alone for an extended period of time at this point.
Before we let you go, what's the status of the in-house, in your house? What was the in-your-house thing called with Sean Morley and Kamala?
House show.
Thank house you. Show. I had it written down and I had it backwards. How soon is that coming to a DVD box near you?
There's a lot of that is still up in the air, so I couldn't give you a fair picture right now. But stay tuned. Whatever we bring you will be interesting. We promise.
All righty.
Certainly worth your money.
That is Sean Oliver, kayfabecommentaries.com. This weekend, Legends of the Ring, as we mentioned with Booker T. Definitely, if you're in the New York, New Jersey area, get out there. Are you going to be hanging out that Saturday with the Express, so people can come up and meet you?
You know, I've been at the conventions in the past. I'm not going to be there this year, but come to the roast. I'll be at the roast.
Yeah, then you'll have legal paperwork standing by in case Scott Hall walks in and tries to smack somebody around.
It's called the Scott Hall form now. It's a generic form. It's called the Scott Hall form, and one is available at the door. If anyone would like to do a run-in, please just fill out the Scott Hall form. Drop it with a Legends of the Ring or Ring Roast crew member, and then you can do your run-in right onto the stage.
There you have it. Sean Oliver joining us. We'll be back after this commercial break on our World of Wrestling Radio. We'll be back.
The $1 million man.
Paul Pullman, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Vance, the Boogie Wiggleman.
And tomorrow,
Peter Wilson, Natty Neidhart,
Harry Smith, Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the thanks to Pro Juice, Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Yeah.
show.
Greetings, my fellow geeks. This is Mace of Otaku Talk Live, and I have come out here today to address you as one of you. What I have done is I have created a download-only podcast for those of us who want to sit there and talk about comics, for those of us who want to sit there and just talk video games, and for those of us who just want to sit there and bash the living crap out of movies. What is this called? It's called Bashing the Book. Who are you going to hear on it? Me! You get to hear me go on and on about comic books, movies, and games. So, think of it as a mini OTL, but with more Australian. So, that's Bashing the Book, available hopefully every Wednesday or Thursday, right here on WildTalkRadio.com. I now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
In case you missed it, this is what happens when WTR roasts Tim Stein.
Tim Stein is also not Jewish. It's horrible to assume the man is Jewish just because his name is Stein. You know, maybe that isn't even his real name. It's probably Goldstein or Steinberg. You don't know. He'd tell you himself if he were here tonight. I'm told he's taking the day off for some holiday of his. I don't remember what it's called, but he pronounced it with a...
Tim really does work hard at making the WTR network what it is. Seriously, I'm not joking. Somebody pay this guy. He's like 65 years old. He needs retirement. He gets retirement, we get less Tim Stein. It's win-win, gang. Come on.
Happy birthday. You suck. You suck. You suck so bad. That's not true. You don't actually suck. You more or less blow. You've got a perfect face for gay porn, or at least a perfect mouth. That's what JJ tells me. He's also not a pervert. The last couple of years, he had a wonderful and healthy relationship. And stayed with her every night. Constant, wild sex. You know, it's sad when they had to break up because he couldn't find the puncture repair kit. Don't get me wrong, they tried to patch things up, but Tim just couldn't bear the sight of her anymore. Not with a duct tape holding her neck closed.
Tune in to all the great programming on the Wild Talk Radio Network, as you never know what will happen next.
Option 1 is the way to join us here in the third hour of Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. The toll-free is brought to you by Underground Radio. And thanks to all of you who have stuck with us through Jerry Lynn, through Booker T, through Sean Oliver. And since Jerry Lynn cursed a little bit, and everybody cursed it, I'm going to curse a little bit. Screw you, Mark David Chapman, for taking one of the greatest writing minds of our time from us way, way too damn early. I hope Yoko Ono outlives you, you piece of crap, so each and every year she can show up when you go for your parole hearing and you'll get denied. And if I have to pay someone in a New York prison to kill you myself, maybe I will. John Lennon Knight, he would have been 70 this past weekend. His son Julian was robbed of him, his son Sean was robbed of him, all of us were robbed of him, and we all got robbed this past Sunday night, kids. If you didn't listen to us on Wrestle Talk Radio this past Sunday night with the Spug Guy and Mace and Omega and Tim Stein, this will be the PG version of what these gentlemen had to say after watching the event that was Bound for Glory. If either one of you have any thoughts on John Lennon, are you fine with me picking him for music tonight?
I actually think that Mark David Chapman should get paroled.
Huh?
Yeah, you heard me. I think he should be paroled. 100% honestly believe that he should be paroled. Because we parole serial killers and killers who do worse than he did every day. Every day in this country, there is someone who gets paroled. It is only because it was John Lennon that he is still in jail. And that's unfortunate.
Can we send Vince Russo and Creative to jail after this event, guys? Because, I mean, as we talked about it on Sunday, and we're not going to rehash every single thing we talked about on the Rope Talk Radio event, but Tim mentioned it, Omega mentioned it, and you guys mentioned it, that this day, in quotes, possibly was in the works for a good 6 months, 5 months, and Hogan's back injury probably put a little bit of a dent in this. Instead, we're not going to do match for match, because it gets done wonderfully on Wrestle Talk Radio, but before we destroy the actual main event and everything went around it, to Spug, then the Mace, favorite match of the night from this event was what for you?
My favorite match of the night probably was the Lethal Lockdown.
Were you fine with EV2 winning? Because I believe all of us actually picked Fortune to win that event.
I was fine with it. I had no issue.
Your favorite of the night, Mace?
Mine actually came down to a draw between the Monsters Ball match between Abyss and RVD. And the tag team opener that started out the night, No City Machine Guns versus Generation Me.
I'm going to go with the Guns and Gen Me. It was one of the better matches that they could have chosen. They could have chosen any others to open it. Oh, well, Bound for Glory 05 had some really good stuff, and 06 and Detroit had some good stuff. One thing that a couple fans emailed to us at RadioAndOnlineWillOfWrestling.com wanted to ask us, were we surprised that Jay Lethal took on Douglas Williams instead of the man he got the belt back from in New Jersey after dropping in New York? Would you have rather seen Slug and Mace, Jay Lethal versus the Amazing Red than Douglas Williams?
I would have rather seen Amazing Red because those two styles complement each other more. And I will say this, Douglas Williams does not belong in the X Division. I get it that he's trying to bring a whole different style to the X Division, but he honestly, as his wrestling body type, all of that, it doesn't belong there.
Yeah, I'm with Spug on that one. Douglas Williams does not belong in the X Division. I've been saying it for months on end. The guy can't work with these faster guys. Put him in the mid-card scene with some other mid-card guys that can wrestle that type of style or something like that. But as for Jay Lethal going up against Douglas Williams at Bound for Glory instead of Amazing Red, that actually surprised me considering that previously on Impact, they had actually shown the fact that Amazing Red had beat Jay Lethal on a series of recent live events. And then you've got this week on Impact where somebody goes up against Amazing Red and that person seems to be pushing into the X Division title match instead of Amazing Red yet again. It's confusing booking. And you notice I'm keeping it spoiler-free. I'm not mentioning names because, frankly, if I start mentioning names, I'm going to go off on a six-hour tangent.
Oh, and we have that in the budget to a degree, but not to that point. Seeing the weird stuff, nothing happened to be weirder than this storyline they're running with Showtime Eric Young and Orlando Jordan. There were reports on other sites, including our message forum, OWW Genesis, that Eric's contract is possibly going to be up soon. either one of you think that this is creative, just going, we want to keep Eric on TV and this is what we'll do with him instead of letting him be? Because I mean, it was fun. I enjoyed seeing the Eric Young that was with Kevin Nash. That was, it wasn't the ha-ha. Because you'd seen Eric do so much ha-ha with Team Canada after the Team 3D funeral, and then the pie, oh, my pyro didn't go off, I'm fine, boom, and he falls down again. Are you guys okay with this storyline? Is it okay to have a little bit of ha-ha in the seriousness of Evie versus Fortune and then what Sting and Pope and Nash are running with?
First of all, I want to say this about Eric Young. I get that TNA is marketed towards a older audience, and they're marketed towards more what we call the hardcore marks or the smart marks in the fan base of wrestling. But there's no reason to have porn star written across your chest. None. None whatsoever. I mean, that really bugged me.
Well, that's one of those, that's a tough one to address. Because as you said, look, he's with Orlando Jordan. So, how you don't want to touch the Goldust homophobic type button. But I, as a parent, I'm kind of going along with you. I really don't want my 8-year-old walking in, like you said, on Sunday. I don't want my daughter coming in and going, Daddy, what's a porn star? Because it's written on Eric Young. I mean, so yeah. You're kind of in agreement. You were happier when Showtime was busy ducking his pyro and running around with SoCal Val and doing all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I was perfectly fine with it. That, you want to be silly like that, that's fine. But to have the stuff that was written on him invisible to the television camera and the TV audience, it's just, I don't think it should be done. I really don't.
Your thoughts on that, Mace, the whole thing with Eric Young?
Well, in regards of what you guys were saying specifically about the whole porn star across the chest thing, yeah, I'm not a father. I'm a big brother to an 8-year-old. And, yeah, I can understand where you guys are coming from. You don't want the kids to see this. You don't want to have to sit there and explain it to them at this point in their lives. Leave that till their mid-20s, hopefully, especially those of you who have daughters. As for Eric Young generally, I like a little bit of ha-ha in the wrestling. You know, it's always been like that in some regards. You know, we all came up in the 80s where you had Doink the Clown, you know, giving us the ha-has in wrestling. But Eric Young can do so much better. He's done so much ha-ha that I enjoy him now when he's serious again. You know, like you were saying, Alan, you know, his time with Kevin Nash where he was serious, that's the Eric Young I liked more. And they need to bring him back to that and keep him at that and give him a decent friggin' run as that type of character.
Point well taken. 877-588-9877, option 1 is the way to join us on All My Will of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by Wild Talk Radio Productions. And Click Wrestle, the on-demand folks. Our number is brought to you by undergroundradio.com. Now for the moment you kids have all been waiting for, and that would be the unveiling of Sting. That's right. Instead of it being Paul Heyman, instead of it being Vince McMahon himself, or Shane McMahon, or even Ed McMahon from beyond the grave, we got Hulk Hogan, Eric Bischoff, Abyss, Jeff Jarrett, and Jeff Hardy. And as we'll see this Thursday night on Impact, if you thought there was a lack of wrestling on the Before the Glory event, oh baby. My friend Sean, whose TNA screen name is Lars, who's involved in event talent stuff, or was, said to me, a gentleman sitting next to him at this Thursday event at Allaire this Thursday turned to him and said, welcome to total non-wrestling action. Go ahead in your best PG feelings, Mace, and address this pretty risky creative angle where you have a guy who took forever to walk to the ring, get in the ring, and do his thing in Hulk Hogan, and the end result.
Well, the Hulk Hogan taking forever and a day to get to the ring, that I'll let go because the dude has been in back surgery. You know, nobody walks correctly after that for quite a while. So good on him for actually being able to hobble his butt down to the ring. However, but this entire thing has destroyed months of build-up. I was so excited to find out who they are, and the second I see Hogan, Bischoff, Jarrett, Abyss, and Hardy in the ring, I'm sitting there going, seriously? Is that what you're giving me after all this build-up? And I actually sat there yesterday, sort of after I was listening to another show go over about possible storylines and where this goes, I sort of sat there and thought to myself, this reveal made no sense whatsoever, because if you go back to what Abyss was originally saying, he was saying they are coming in, they are going to take over, they are sick of being the guys pushed to the side. Yet, if my memory serves me correctly for these past 4 or so months, if it hasn't been Eric Bischoff making decisions, it's been Hulk Hogan making decisions. So why are they coming over and taking over a spot that they already have? Because Dixie Carter's around? That doesn't make any sense. She's, up until the last month and a half, has been in the shadows for 90% of this stuff.
Until she was dragged to the ring this past Thursday in handcuffs. That was a pretty wild way to open the Before the Glory event, man.
Oh, that was horrid. I'm sorry. I really hated watching that. Especially when you got Al Snow practically grabbing onto her arm and Abyss having to turn around and go, get away, Al, get away! You know, it just... That ruined that segment for me. I'm sorry. But, yeah, it's just when you try and look at this logically, this is like somebody... This is like, say, Donald Trump sitting in his office going, I'm going to take over Trump Towers. That doesn't make any sense. The dude already controls the company. He already controls the building. Why would he want to take it over? You know, where's the logic in this? Somebody point out the logic in guys that are already practically running the company coming in to take over the company. They're already in that spot. They don't need to come in and do this big NWO we're taking over thing. As for this being a vehicle for Jeff Hardy to get over as a heel, well, frankly, again, I'm going to reference Impact Spoilers. The way he explains it just made me went, really, I don't care. You know, there's no logic here, and I really want somebody to sit there and explain to me the thought process of how they got to this conclusion and explain to me the plot holes I've already found in it.
You were very vocal before this on who they were, Spug, and we had pitched a bunch of things, such as, you know, the possibility of even Dixie Carter being they, since they had been pushing her into a TV role. Do you share Mace's view on this, or do you have a totally different take?
No, I'm in the same boat with him. I think you... It's the Dixie Carter school of business. Promise one thing and deliver another, because it's been her MO for the past year or so that she gives us all of this hype and circumstance and promise, and then next thing you know, well, it's really not how she made it out to be.
So was this possibly the biggest letdown we've had in a reveal for wrestling fans over the years?
I wouldn't go that far as TNA is concerned. It probably was, because it's a storyline that could have been great, and it was more or less watching Bash at the Beach 96.
And apparently there was a lot of debris from fans that we'll see it this Thursday. Apparently some fans try to reenact that event. They try to reenact Slammiversary the night that Jeff Jarrett got the gold back in controversial fashion, throwing bottles. It's I'm like a broken record, but I'm going along with these guys that and we said it on Sunday as well, it would have made more sense for the belt to be put on Angle and Angle turn heel as opposed to Hardy. And yeah, I kind of mentioned merchandise on Sunday, but I want to take it in a different direction. Jeff Hardy, from what I don't remember his stuff in the Omega thing, so I may be wrong in this, and if I am, ding me on it. But I don't believe up until this point, Jeff has ever even teased or gone heel. So this would kind of be like to old school wrestling fans of out of nowhere, Ricky Steamboat turning heel. Because you have these Hardy fanatics that go to TNA events and paint up like him and dress like him. And now you're basically going to just throw that all away. And I really hope that somehow, some way, this does get corrected. The person that we hoped was going to correct it all was Paul Heyman. In an interview with MMAFighting.com, Paul explained that the proposed deal with TNA Wrestling is long dead after the two sides, or actually three, counting in Spike TV, couldn't come to terms. This is a direct quote from the article at MMAFighting.com. Paul said it came close, real close, with TNA. To me, it was more of a deal with Spike TV and then a stock and ownership deal involving TNA. I had a 5-year plan. His plan was to spend 18 months building a roster, the following 18 months exploiting it, go public in year 3, run with it for the next 2 years, and exit on year 5 at the age of 50. He goes on to say, I had a 5-year plan, include everyone into it. I told TNA what my plan was, and I told Spike TV what my plan was, and how he would capitalize on it, and how he can make this thing move, and as an acknowledgement that wrestling is a diminishing market, and it is not perceived as cool, and here's how you, if not change course, at least present it differently, so that you at least have a chance in today's marketplace to make it at least competitive. He also went on to say, the time has passed, he's not looking back and taking his abilities elsewhere and venturing into mixed martial arts. So Paul Heyman, vision of TNA, we'll never see. Would it have been running with EV all over again? Who knows? As we mentioned, Jerry Lennon mentioned it, everyone mentions it all the time. Paul's got a great mind, just don't let him near your checkbook. Would that have been a bigger holy crap moment of him being they, or folks like Mickey James that are on the outside, like Haas, Benjamin, someone that totally out of left field would have worked better? Because obviously the fans, hit the forums and hit the boards, were crapping all over this thing. I think TNA's Twitter account got a lot of bashing on it, too. So we'll have to see how things go in the next week or so, boys.
With this whole thing, like you mentioned, Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin and Mickey James, if they had walked in with Paul Heyman at the end of the show to reveal to be they, that I could have bought. That I would have understood. But when it's guys within the company in a high spot wanting to take that same spot, again, no sense. But I can understand people crapping all over it, and the fans throwing stuff in the ring, I could almost guarantee you that wasn't, like reports have said, fans being paid to throw things in the ring to make it look like the NWO is starting all over again. I could almost guarantee you at least half of that was people giving them X-Pac style heat. People are pissed off and they want them to know about it.
Seems to be the thing, throw stuff at the ring, or actually pick somebody up and throw them at the ring. That would have been pretty neat. Pick up a little kid, throw him in the ring, and go, you suck, dude, I want my money back.
That would have worked against Cena. pick up the crying kids and throw them at Cena.
Oh, absolutely. As we mentioned with Jerry Lynn on the show, Friday, November 12th, TNA will be returning to Nashville for the first time since September of 04. They will actually be in the TNA Asylum, as it was known at the Nashville Fairgrounds Arena. That said, Friday, November 12th, I believe the meet and greet tickets for that are $50. And as Jerry Lynn said, good luck, because from 02 to 04, you papered the town. So let's see you try to get people's butts in there. Turning point will be November 7th, which I believe also emanates from the Impact Zone, as it'd be called. And we'll see what happens in the weeks to go. Speaking of the weeks to go, we are now 2 weeks from the Bragging Rights event in Minneapolis at Target Center, as opposed to Target Field, where they're not doing anything right now. Sorry, Minnesota Twins fans. This past Monday night, WWE Raw team pretty much was set. They're minus one person, but you have Captain The Miz, Ron Killing, sorry, R-Truth, John Morrison, Sheamus, the newest addition of the Raw roster, as we called it last week, CM Punk, and the surprise factor of Santino Marella? Jim Cornette didn't really talk about him in his U shoots, and we really wish he had, but to either one of you guys, your overall thoughts on Santino as a character, has he run his course completely, or are we cool with him and Snuka's daughter running around doing stuff?
End it, please.
So send him to FCW and let him train like they're doing with Jillian Hall?
Maybe not so much that, but get him out of this thing with Snuka's daughter, or granddaughter, or whatever. I'm sorry, I don't want to see another Santino Marella love angle crap. Especially when his thing with his whole, oh my god, I want to team up with Vladimir Kozlov. That thing went nowhere fast. They need to finish up an idea with this guy before they put him in the next one. They seem to go halfway, stop, put him in a new one, halfway, stop, new one.
Well, Spug, the guy is basically like the Latin lover type or Italian lover type, and the guy's been with Maria Kanellis, Death Phoenix, now this one. I keep wanting to look over my shoulder and go, hey, here comes Mae Young. Why not pair him with Mae Young? Your thoughts on Santino overall?
I like the gimmick. I like Santino. I'm hoping that they I like him. I like the what he brings to the table as far as the comedy aspect, but I kind of wish that they would get serious with him for a minute so we can see what he's capable of. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, I understand it. Speaking of comedy, Edge's transition to Friday Night SmackDown and his campaign of stupidity seems to be getting more and more interesting each week. This past week, defeating Jack Swagger. Thoughts on him? Could we possibly be seeing him? I mean, I haven't seen spoilers for Team SmackDown yet, other than it's captained by the Big Show. Do you think his campaign of stupidity is a dumb idea by creative, or are we happy with this?
As I said on WTR, the only thing that I regret about this Edge crusade against stupidity thing, he had a perfect opportunity to spear Michael Cole and he didn't take it. You want to get rid of the stupid in the WWE, start with him.
That's an interesting viewpoint there. Are we for the spearing of Michael Cole, or we just want him to be revealed as the GM spotter? It seems to be that's where this is going. Creative can't get anybody, so let's stick Cole in there.
I would like to get rid of Michael Cole, please.
We want to send him to Shutter Island and never to be seen again. Okay, we can deal with that. Had two championship matches this past Friday night. Dolph Ziggler retained against MVP. The new tag team of Kofi Kingston and Cavall off to Drew McIntyre and Cody Rhodes. And what a great way to keep Alberto Del Rio's push going than have him lose to Rey Mysterio on free TV as opposed to doing it on a pay-per-view, guys. Are we happy so far with the build that Alberto has gotten, or do you think he's already been shot out of the cannon and is coming back down to earth?
Dude hit the wall 2 seconds after he got fired out of the cannon.
I mean, I don't know. They did some great vignettes with him in a mansion, and now he's got his own ring announcer. So is he possibly going to phase out? Is he going to be in Royal Rumble and then before Mania, he'll be one of the many future endeavored, possibly?
I hope not. I like Alberto Del Rio.
The character's quite good, but I don't know, just this whole execution of it just seems to have lost all interest. I really couldn't care less about him at this stage. But that's just me.
And as we mentioned, on Monday Night Raw, we had the continuation of Wade Barrett being basically, like I could think since we've been dropping bombs all night, with John Cena being Wade Barrett's bitch. And running with this, and looks like we already have a match set for next week's Monday Night Raw, which is Husky Harris and Michael McGillicuddy taking on Randy Orton and John Cena, and Barrett basically comes out and says that if Cena loses, that McGillicuddy and Harris are going to be in the Nexus of... Thoughts on these two guys? Do you think creative should have just let McGillicuddy and Harris do their own thing? Or is this going to be like a common thing with the rest of the other members of Season 2 Nexus, like Percy? Percy's been doing stuff still now in FCW, but good or bad idea these two guys being in Nexus?
Who are you going to kick out?
I don't think they're kicking anybody because it's just Tarver, I think, is hurt. So now you've just got Barrett, Gabriel, Utunga, and Heath Slater because you lost Darren Young. So hopefully they'll repackage him and bring him up with Percy because they're a very talented tag team. They call the South Beach Players in FCW. So I don't think you're kicking anybody, Slug. I think these two are just coming in maybe as like the enforcers of Nexus.
I like this idea. So I'm just thinking because there's been rumblings going around the interwebs about the bragging rights match being turned into a three-way with Team Raw, Team SmackDown, and Team Nexus. You count it up. Like, go through who you just said. You got Barrett, Gabriel, the little red-headed kid,
Slater.
Who's the other one?
Otunga.
Otunga. You add in Harris. And McGillicuddy. That's six. Cena, that's your seven.
Yeah, and you've got Barrett already in a title match against Randy Orton, so you need to see. Unless he comes out and he bosses. Or maybe Cena does the full heel flip there. We had called it last week to take a pay-per-view for Cena to turn. Bragging rights maybe way too early to jump that gun.
Yeah, the bragging rights would be a way too early thing. I'd say if you're going to start it
start the slow turn. You start it next week on Raw when you've got Cena and Orton going up against McGillicuddy and Harris. Because then you have Wade Barrett turning around and going, these guys are on with Nexus if you lose Cena, but here's the thing, I want you to cause a loss by attacking Randy Orton. Because now we finally get the thing that I wanted to see happen, being Nexus manipulating Cena to do the heel things, gradually turn him to their way of thinking. As opposed to GM standing over the top of him going, you made a deal, Cena.
You made a deal with the devil, buddy, and now you gotta live with it.
Yeah. So it's just one of those things where I want to see Cena get in these situations where he's being forced to do something he doesn't want to do. But at the same time, Barrett's trying to turn Cena to their way of thinking.
Dawson,
yeah.
Opinions from the Spud guy.
I'm with Mace, and we got into a pretty heated debate with Omega on... Oh, crap. On Sunday night about it. And I really think that what they need to do with Cena is get away from the GM is telling him to do it and make sure that it's all Nexus and Barrett. You know what I mean?
And at some point, for the love of humanity, make him wear a Nexus shirt.
Yeah, he should
start
come out
torturing
to the Nexus
him. I think he kind of did that during the Battle Royal the week before, where his music played, and then he came out very sheepishly, like, oh, crap, I got to come out with these Nexus guys. Ugh.
Yeah. But when they go to tag up him and Orton this week, have Barrett turn around and, by the way, you're going to wear this. Which could cause the little rift between Cena and Orton in the match.
Yes, we have these very nice pair of black pants you need to start wearing. Black pants, black hat, black shirt. Ding! Guess what? Bad guy material. Of these matches that we witnessed on Monday Night Raw, to get into the bragging rights thing, the best pairing of the night, maybe a little biased, was John Morrison and TJ Wilson. Now, there's rumors going around that Harry and him, sorry, David Hart Smith, that this is the end of the Hart dynasty and Natty's going to go off and do her deal or also be paired with TJ. For fans that haven't seen TJ's solo work, definitely find some of it. And that finishing move that Morrison pushed off was just, I had to replay it a couple times to go, what the heck did they do there, man? Holy crap. Thoughts on that pairing, Morrison and Wilson? Could that be a good house show match? That could be a show stealer, or are we hoping that the Hart dynasty isn't being torn apart?
I'm going to go with I hope the Hart dynasty isn't being pulled apart, only because it's good to see an actual tag team in the WWE. That, and I don't want to see Natty jobbing to Lay Cool for the next 16 months.
I agree. I'm in.
And that promo, Natty and Lay Cool, is just why you have these two. It seems to be this thing now. You know, you get a contender, we come out. Here's a great creative move, guys. Let's bash our divas. We'll let these two go out and bash the divas. And then the other divas will come up behind the person and beat the snot out of them. And Natty just stands in the ring like, oh, well, yeah, I guess that's the end of the promo. I don't get the whole creative aspect there.
Look, we all know that that Natty could turn both members of Lay Cool into a couple of separate pretzels at any point in time. But, of course, we all know why Michelle McCool has a belt on her shoulder.
and it's for doing a job another way, that's for sure.
Hey, 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 we that's
hey, I left it, TG, shut up. But come on, let Natty be Natty. Let her turn these Barbie dolls into pretzels and send them back to Mattel where they belong.
I wish she was the same way. And Giant Amon said it months ago, and we had him on here. She's the best woman on the roster. She could probably kick the crap out of some of the guys on the roster. So I don't understand it. I understand that there's stories going around that she's actually working with Finley to train these girls. And the first person who needs to be in line for training is Michelle Calloway. I mean, McCool. Because I've watched the wrestle, and I want to write a letter to PWI magazine and go, you named this one the number one wrestler, woman wrestler on the planet?
You know when they were putting that list together, Mark was standing over the top of them going, you don't put her first, I'm going to give you the tombstone and rest in peace. That killed my throat.
We'll get you a loft, and Spug's gonna step away for a little bit here, so we thank him for being on the show tonight and helping us out. Just Mace and I for the last couple minutes here as we wrap on My World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by Wild Talk Radio Productions, the folks at Click Wrestle, and ASW Full Throttle Wrestling Friday nights at the Strokers on Hillsborough Avenue in Tampa. Bragging rights so far, we've only know the two main matches, being that you have Team SmackDown, Team Raw. You've got Orton and Barrett for the belt. Kane obviously is going to have to defend it against someone, possibly Kane and Taker again. Not really sure why. Like I said, we haven't seen spoilers yet, but judging from the way Monday Night Raw ran this week, before, by the time SmackDown rolls around, we'll have a bunch of people maimed, and isn't it a little convenient that Big Show is the captain when his Knucklehead movie is gonna be out? I think they're doing it in theaters as like a Fathom event type thing, that it's in theaters for 2 days and going to DVD. I wish these guys
would be like Legendary.
I had friends, Jason Davis and his girlfriend Catherine, who are listeners to the show here in Tampa, and he's the executive producer of ASW Chain Reactions, that they went to see, Cena did a midnight appearance at Walmart, which was being one of the exclusive vendors for that film, and said that give it to Cena's credit, he was originally told, you have to buy the Legendary film to see him, and they said there were people that had their little kids there. There were guys that were 30, 40, 50, sometimes 45 years old, dressed full out in the Cena mania craziness. But give it to John. He signed everything, took pictures with kids that are adults and everything. So good for him and what they do for Make-A-Wish Foundation. And it looks like from what we saw, they've been in cahoots for years with the USO and doing tributes to the troops, and it looks like that event possibly is not going to happen this year, and that's an interesting surprise. And to me, to you maybe not, Mace, to the listeners maybe not, but when you've been doing that for years, you know, I kind of like seeing that, because I've had some military friends that have been in Iraq and Afghanistan, and it was cool 1 year to be sitting there and going, holy crap, I know that dude. He's sitting there at a camp in Iraq on a day off watching WWE wrestling. And it's weird. I don't know if it's a political thing again with Linda getting close to office or not getting close to office, but maybe I'm reading way too much into the tea leaves. I don't know.
Yeah, well, maybe with this event, I understand the whole patriotism and everything, and this is a good way to say thank you to the troops and all that. Personally, I remember the first couple where it was U.S. troops only. Every other country that was there, if they had troops there, they weren't allowed to go because it was American troops only, which was a great big FU to the rest of the world. But they relaxed that rule since, and I've noticed that quite a few other countries have been represented in the crowd at that show. But to sort of take it out of there, I can sort of see how it would more benefit the roster, as I'm quite sure those plane rides over would be hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, it looks like they're going over on transports and all that kind of craziness. So it's not like they're flying in very nice, comfortable plane seats going to Tokyo for 16 hours. And they do some great stuff with Make-A-Wish Foundation. And it's one of those, I kind of wish you would see those advertisements on TNA. Hint, hint, Dixie, great PR move. Get in bed with one of these cool charities. I'm just saying, maybe I'm wrong. Yeah.
But also, you remember that WWE does provide free tickets to, I can't remember exactly which group it is, but somebody in the American military always
all
gets free
US,
tickets.
I think it's all U.S. military personnel.
Yeah, they get free tickets to any show, like Raw, SmackDown, whatever. Which is a good move by the company, because that way they're supporting the troops all year round rather than just one event a year.
Oh, absolutely.
And again, as you were saying, yeah, Dixie needs to start thinking in terms of doing some of these type of things. Because, hey, promotion is good promotion.
Yeah, and we're pretty good at it for them. Speaking of promotions, we had a recent visit from the notorious 187 Homicide. He mentioned some interesting things coming up for him, and it looks like we mentioned Women's Superstars Uncensored will be doing a live iPay-per-view in conjunction with the Go Fight Live Network, and it looks like the Notorious 187 is invading WSU. Why? I think you need to go to WSUWrestling.com and check out a video with Homicide to find out why. Interesting.
Could this be, is it actually Homicide, or is it his sister Homicina?
I don't know if I want to see that. And he may be listening in New York. He may be listening in New York going, they're bashing me, man. Don't be making fun of me. I'll be talking to him as we get closer to the ALCS kicking off this Friday with Braves fans, you're home alone again because the Texas Rangers have advanced on. Pretty amazing. Very happy to hear that. Some other indie news. The formerly known as World's Greatest Tag Team, Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin, are going to be making their ROH TV debuts at a taping, I believe it's December 9th and 10th. In Kentucky, or is it November? I had the sheet here, and now through all the pages of questions we went through with the three guests tonight, I've lost it. So for all the money issues that supposedly are going on in ROH, pretty interesting to keep Hoss Benjamin around there to feud with Claudio and Chris Hero, who are the current ROH World Tag Team Champions, and who knows? It'll be interesting to say the least. Thanks to some networking, I've obtained a way to see some of the HDNet stuff. And hopefully ROH isn't having the issues that all these people are saying they are. None of us want to see a situation like that, Mace, where a company is looks like great in-ring product, and then financially they're going, okay, we're going to pay you tonight with this bologna sandwich. Enjoy.
Hey, I've taken plenty of bookings like that.
Oh,
I've gone and worked shows where I've been paid in food.
As opposed to some of the ECW staff that was paid in narcotics. But hey, that's all speculation and rumor that we can't confirm. What we can confirm is this has been an amazingly awesome show tonight. And thanks to the folks at Legends of the Ring for having Booker T here. Thanks to my friend Tamela Jones,
who got me in touch with Mrs. Jerry Lynn to have Jerry Lynn on, and thanks to myself for getting Sean Oliver on. As mentioned always, we are a part of the Wild Talk Radio Network, which is wildtalkradio.com. And as we wrap up here on Beatle, John Lennon, Julian Lennon night, we're going to give you some information on the other programs. Due to circumstances beyond our control, once again, Mind and Body with Matt and Johnny was not on the air tonight, and hopefully that will get rectified sooner, if not later. Tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern on this very network, the Spud Guy, Mr. Mace himself, and the end-all, be-all of the WTR network, Omega, bring us Utaku Talk Live. And as mentioned, midgets, cartoons, craziness. Any other inklings you want to drop in there?
Just pretty much a review and opinions on the week's worth of geek news. Plus, I'm sure we'll find some way to talk about midgets and parts of Spug's anatomy, which we cannot mention on the air. I don't know. He seems to sneak it in every week. We can't stop him. But the only way you're going to find out, tune in to Otaku Talk Live, 9 p.m. Eastern, tomorrow night, right here on wildtalkradio.com.
And also, he's not done, because not only does he appear on that show, he graciously appears on this show. He is a part of Russell Talk Radio, but he's got his own podcast, man. Mace is everywhere. Mace is he's already taken over Australia. He's coming across to the United States. Talk about your podcast. I believe it's entitled Bashing the Book.
Yes, I know we do play a commercial here for Bashing the Books, where I talk about it being basically a mini OTL that is currently incorrect. Well, Bashing the Books is I take four random picks from my weekly comic book pile that arrives thanks to my local comic book store. And I go through them, I review them, I give people history on the storyline if needed. I also give recommendations on older books, older series that I've read in the past. And if there's a comic book based movie, I will give it a quick review, or in the case of Resident Evil Afterlife, just completely crap all over because I have the outlet for it. I do try to get this up every Thursday or Friday night right here on wildtalkradio.com. It all depends on when I can get my books because, well, I don't have money every time, so sometimes it takes a bit longer.
And if you feel like sending him some money, he is available through the Skype network at MASE, that is Mace. Thursday night is Not Anything Goes Night. The lovely Cindy Sin will be busy elsewhere. However, you can go to cindysin.com, which is S-N-D-Y-S-Y-N-N. What?
S-Y-N-D-Y-S-Y-N-N.com. And the voting has been closed. You can check the results right now at facebook.com/cindysin for what she is wearing.
Ah, is she going to Sir Rockin' this year, maybe?
No.
Damn. Right, that's who I voted for. I voted for her to dress as you. The hockey show possibly will be Saturday, possibly Thursday, not really sure. Had a blast with Tim Stein doing 2 hours of nothing but hockey. Hopefully I'll find a game on this week, either on Versus or some of the wonderful internet sightings that the D. Tim Stein has provided us with. Running the Ropes this Friday at 6 is actually going to be hosted by Nick. Did I read that right?
Yeah, the co-host of Running Ropes, Nick, from Australia. He'll be hosting the show. He's been producing the show. And I don't know who his co-host is going to be. I don't know if it's Maverick or anything, but we'll see. Running Ropes, 6 p.m. Eastern.
This Saturday night, 9 o'clock, is TD. Trey Dogg's Top 20 Music Countdown, which I believe, according to Tim, had a really good turnout, so
We encourage you to do that. And, of course, Midnight-ish on Saturday is the one, the only CB Radio. Any preview of what possibly could be going on, Sir Rockin?
Spooktober month in CB Radio. CB Radio continues this week. We'll be looking at more movies, songs. We want stories. We want jokes. All dealing with Halloween. Spooktober month on CB Radio.
And, of course, Russell Talk Radio, Sunday nights. This week, there is no pay-per-view, so they will be on at 10 p.m. Eastern with Tim Stein, with the Omega, with Mace, the Bug Guy, possibly Will, possibly not, possibly the Ghosts of Christmas Past, Present, and Future. Who knows? Also, check out wildtalkradio.com because we do have random DJ nights, either DJ Stein, DJ Rockin' Sock, DJ Kitty, that annoying thing from the Tampa Bay Rays. And I want to thank the big losses, Jason Deadrich and Brad Dykins, as always. All My World of Wrestling Radio is sponsored by them. AllMyWorldOfWrestlingRadio.com. They have Twitter, OWWCOM. Wild Talk Radio has Twitter. I do not. I'm not cool enough, and Kenny King said I can't have it, so I'm not going there. We're all over Facebook. Wild Talk Radio's got Facebook. Mason's got it. I've got it. Spug's got it. Rockin' Sock's got it. Sandy Sin's got it. We all sound like we've been to a TV ward. It's like, did you get it? Yeah. Damn. All right. Thanks to Jerry Lynn for gracing us with his presence, the one and only Booker T, Sean Oliver, the great writings of Julian Lennon, Paul McCartney, John Lennon, and my favorite Beatles tune is one that was actually written for Julian Lennon on the divorce of his parents. To take us out tonight on All My World of Wrestling Radio, it's Hey Jude, have a good night.
Hey Jude, don't be afraid.